Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. All right, Earth Explorers. You might want to reach down in front of you, grab that belt, and just cinch it up a little bit tighter, because tonight is going to be, wow, we're going to be talking about UFOs, Warp 10 tonight, so don't go away. The solar wind is a brisk 402.4 kilometers per second, sunspots 11, 13, and 11, 17 are showing nicely, but quiet. We don't really know what's going on there. The number to pay attention to today is the proton count up to 6.1 protons per cubic centimeter, so sunscreen won't help you here. Wear long sleeves and don't lay out in the sun. Long-term exposure may cause skin damage. There is a solar wind that arrived this weekend, so be on the lookout for auroras if you're in the northern latitudes. Last week, we reported to you that the X-37B, you know, the little mini space shuttle that was taken over by the U.S. Air Force, put on the rapid deployment program and launched up into space on a mysterious nine-month mission, had disappeared a few days ago. Trackers who had been reporting on a daily basis of the whereabouts and visible activities of the small and clandestine, now military, spacecraft noticed that it disappeared from its orbit suddenly and without announcement. Speculation of its landing, movement, or even its destruction floated around for about a week. Then, about 5 days later, the trackers spotted it, 54 kilometers closer to the Earth, in a tighter, faster orbit. The question was, why did it move? And that is sort of the subject of tonight's broadcast here on X Squared Radio. Because a few days later, bright lights appeared over New York. Now, last week, we covered this a little bit from a strange angle, and that is that the mainstream media has been covering it in a lot of detail and a lot of stations. But we really didn't put two and two together until during this week. And so we're going to rerun the subject matter from a different point of view. So tonight, I have two experts with me on X Squared Radio. One is renowned ufologist and expert in the field, James Gilliland from Isetti Ranch up in Trout Lake, Washington, a known hotspot for UFOs. And then later in the program, in about 30 minutes, we have former Minister of Defense for the UK, Nick Pope, coming on the program. He's been on X Squared Radio before. He became a Fox News commentator. And he's going to give us a little bit update on what the government's doing, what the governments are thinking about this UFO. But just to kind of put it in perspective before we bring James on, I'm going to play you an audio clip. This is very, very typical of the news that very recently hit the airwaves, just to kind of set the tone. Here we go. Don't go away.
Crowds in New York have had their eyes to the skies in an alleged UFO sighting. Dozens of videos posted online show passersby seemingly staring at a group of unidentified flying objects in the sky over Manhattan. Adding mystery to the event is a prediction by a retired air defense officer. In a recent book, he claimed that on October 13th, the day of the sighting, of course, a fleet of UFOs would hover over the world's principal cities.
All right, so we don't want to pay a whole lot of attention to the former air officer, because right here on X Squared Radio, about a year ago, we predicted that this would happen. And 4 years ago, at the Isetti Ranch live, we predicted that within 4 years there would be global first contact. And that's what we're really excited about. Now, just to kind of tell you what kind of forces are being marshaled here. Earth observation imagery provider GOI plans to move its headquarters to Fairfax County, Virginia. No big news there. I mean, it's going to cost them $84,000 to move from Virginia to help with the move. And the Washington Post reported Tuesday, Joseph F. Greaves, the company's chief financial officer, said GOI needed a larger space to consolidate two locations. Hey, I need a larger space, too. $84,000 to make the move? That would be cool. But the new office will provide space to expand, he says. That is not the important thing to notice about this. According to the article, GOI considered relocating to Colorado or Maryland. Put the finger on the chin. Where would you move? But opted to stay in Virginia to be near its main customer, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Ever hear of that? NGA. In August, NGA awarded GOI a contract worth as much as $3.8 billion over 10 years to provide satellite imagery of what? The question plaguing everyone is, what are they looking for on Earth so intently from space? Interesting stuff. Welcome to the program, James. How are you?
Oh, doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, the more I investigate about this story, about these UFOs showing up. Now UFOs are no big deal. Not to us. I mean, you got T-shirts that say, they're here. Get over it.
Yeah.
If you go to the East Eddy Ranch up in Trout Lake, Washington, you're going to see a UFO. You can almost guarantee it. But New York? Come on, this is one of the most paranoid cities in the entire world. They've already been attacked once. They can scramble jets in 45 seconds flat. What's going on, James? How come UFOs are floating over New York and nobody's going up to see?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting story. I know it happened in Texas as well. The almost identical event happened there. And, you know, looking at observing these situations, they're quite interesting. They're not like the ones that we see here on a regular basis, but we have seen UFOs here land on the mountain and morph into three or four and then go back again to one, you know, and then take off. So we actually have that on film. So they do have that ability. What I'm concerned about is that there's several other things going on as well at the same time. So, you know, we have our own space fleet that's a secret government project that's been around, you know, for quite some time. And we have those technologies as well as we have these Project Blue Beams and some, you know, other ones where Wernher von Braun has been warning about us over and over again that there would be a mock ET invasion, a fake ET invasion. As another false flag event, you know, to keep the war industry going and keep people in fear and keep people in need of some governmental authority to take care of them and protect them, et cetera, et cetera. You know, basically, to me, it's if you use common sense, basically the ETs have been around since the beginning of time. They're in the frescoes. They're in every ancient book you can pick up just about. They're in the Bible. They're in the Vedic scriptures. Incredible descriptions of their ships are in there, the different types of ships. Some ships are physical. Some are energy. Some are magnetized light ships, and some are pure consciousness. They talk about the armaments of each ship and great battles that happened in the past with these ships. So they've been around forever. And if they were really here to invade and take us over and whatever, I mean, that would have been done a long, long time ago. So what I'm seeing is there's a possibility of two events. One is they are doing their disclosure program from the skies and putting an end to all the nonsense and the cover up and just the deception that's been going on for so long, or it's, you know, the beginning of this, mock ET invasion false flag program. So it could be one or the other, or it could be both. And my feeling is that right now, I think the mock ET invasion was preempted by the more benevolent ones. And so they're starting to show themselves before the other guys can get their other program off the floor, you might say.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. I have, you know, thought about this, and I did a little bit of research on it, and here's what I found. I found a clip. It goes back a ways, all the way to President Reagan. It was kind of a, you know, just something that he floated, sort of like, you know, the Cold War is going on. We're gearing up all of our weapons, pointing at each other. But what if, let's just hear what Reagan had to say about it. This is an excerpt.
And your children. I couldn't help at one point in our discussions privately with General Secretary Gorbachev, when you stop to think that we're all God's children, wherever we may live in the world, I couldn't help but say to him, just think how easy his task and mine might be in these meetings that we held if suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species, from another planet, outside in the universe.
So this is an excerpt from Reagan himself. And, you know, it's a little cryptic now, but how real is this idea that, you know, we're going to penetrate the sovereignty of the airspace over the United States, over the UK, over, you know, various countries. We're going to fly with impunity. And the people are going to be looking up and saying, hey, what's going on here? How come you guys aren't protecting us? And then a new budget will be assigned, maybe from companies like GOI getting $3.8 billion or the Defense Department getting $1.3 trillion for a budget this year, as opposed to a mere $600 billion for NASA. What's going on? Who do we have to defend ourselves against?
Well, to me, the real threat is not really coming from the skies. It's us. You know, we have this, we're very warlike, we're very aggressive, we are engaging in wars all the way across the planet, we're completely destroying our environment. You know, we've allowed the war industry, the oil industry, the pharmaceutical industry to just pretty much run everything, just run over everybody with no oversight, no real oversight. So basically, I can't really see how any other civilization could do any more damage to the Earth and its people than is going on right now. You know, so basically, you know, you really think about this, and I've talked about this over and over again. Okay, so you have the oil industry. These beings come, and they have fuel-less energy technology. You know, anti-gravity, counter-gravity, no fuel. They've transcended all material lack. They've transcended all disease. You know, they don't. They're peaceful people. They live according to, you know, universal peace or universal principles. So, you know, these beings come in. They're totally contrary to the existing status quo, you might say, or ruling elite that's in control right now.
Well, you know, that's an interesting statement because when I speak to individuals like Brent Miller, who runs Remote Viewing, or I listen to excerpts from revelations that have been given by Ed Dames, I find that you know, there's a significant community out there that's saying some of these critters up there are nefarious and they're up to no good. So are all of them benevolent? Are some of them benevolent? Are we being helped? Are we being hunted? What's going on?
Well, my understanding is that the more, let's call them low-level contacts that are more self-serving and have their own programs going, those groups have been here for quite some time, and they've made agreements with governments and, you know, in exchange for genetics, and they were given technology and things of that nature. So, you know, in the interest of national security, they took that path, and it turned out to be a very dark road. And so they had to break off that program and hopefully learned a valuable lesson. At the same time, they could have aligned with the more benevolent ones who said, yeah, we'll help you with your technology. We'll help you clean up your environment, but you have to choose peace and you have to get rid of the nukes, because those are detrimental, not just to your world, but almost other dimensions. It's a very, very nasty toy to be playing with. And they were turned down. So, I think we're getting a golden opportunity, a second opportunity now to come in and align ourselves with the more benevolent ones, and the old low-level contacts that have been running amok here are being ushered out by these higher beings, you know, as we speak. So you'll see the abduction phenomenon has just pretty much gone back to zip. You know, there's hardly anything happening there. And a lot of these other things, but there still are some regenerate forces here at play. I've had encounters with them. I've experienced them firsthand. And, but they're a very small piece of the puzzle compared to the benevolent ones who are actually coming in. And the earth is moving into a new place in time, it's evolving. We're moving to a new place in space. It's highly energized, highly charged. We're aligning with galactic plane. We're about ready to take a quantum leap in evolution. So all these higher beings now, these ultra-dimensional beings and benevolent ETs and are all coming in right now to assist us in that jump. And that's where we need to focus our attention.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I think that where we focus our attention is the way the race of man goes. Mm-hmm. If we focus our attention on building up armaments and playing a game of one-upmanship, weapon for weapon, numbers against numbers, eventually somebody is going to come to power, some Obama Dinajad, who mm-hmm. is going to rise up and say, we need to press this button. Let's have a war. And it's getting to the point now where they don't even have to draft soldiers. The economy is such that literally millions of Americans have been driven by scarcity into service, sort of duped, as it were, into the National Guard. Oh, sure, we'll give you money for school. You only have to go every other weekend, you know, blah, blah, blah. Oh, guess what? We're deploying you. And we're going to send you full time twice to Iraq or to Kuwait or to Afghanistan. Our National Guard, which was made up of school teachers and bus drivers and engineers and painters and artists, is now made up of battle hardened troops.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different playground now, folks. We have different forces at work. And I could tell you right now, if you listen to speeches given by Eisenhower and others, once this organization of mighty militarization is tooled up and bulked up with money and with bureaucrats, they're not going home very easily.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. It's sad, but that's where it's going. And you know, we've participated in that. And the American people are going to have to wake up and smell the coffee and realize that most of these threats are manufactured, and we have to go deep into, you know, how these are manufactured and created, and the origin of certain terrorist groups and things like that to get the real truth. But that's a whole nother story. But again, we have a choice. Are we going to take the path of aggression and separation and againstness and let this pure, unbridled, reckless greed run the planet? We're seeing examples of what happens when you let the war industry take over. And you know, basically you have war all over the globe right now. We've seen what happens when you let the oil industry take over, you know, with their bought and paid scientists and politicians and things of that nature. You have the Gulf Oil, you know, and you have a whole sea being killed off with reckless greed. And, you know, we've seen what happens when we let the big corporations, the pharmaceutical corporations, take over as well. You have all these epidemics that are actually man-made, and then you have all these solutions which are worse than the epidemic itself. So,
well, you have treatment. You have, you know, someday somebody comes to Pfizer and says, hey, one of our researchers has inadvertently discovered a cure for diabetes. And the board of Pfizer says, oh, no. We need a lot more research on that. We can't let that out right now. Do you realize how much insulin this company sells every hour of every day?
Mm-hmm.
You're exactly right, James.
And that is the problem. It's we've allowed people that are war and disease profiteers to pretty much take over. And they really have no respect for life, for families, for anybody. It's all just about profit. And You know, they control the media. They, you know, you look at, you turn on your TV, you've got one drug commercial after another, you know, you've got terror all over the news, terror this, you know, it's alert orange, alert red, you know, this and this and this. You got, I mean, the whole program is set up to keep these major corporations going, and it's unsustainable. That's the thing. It's like, I'm not here to war against the corporations. They are going to consume themselves. Every prophecy talks about this. All the Native American prophecies talk about the beast that eventually consumes itself. And it's not sustainable. The program that we're now on is completely unsustainable, and it will end up in social, economic, and environmental collapse.
Well, there's a couple of good examples of that. One is, of course, the automotive industry. And, of course, they're going to complain and say, no, 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 that's brought on because people don't have jobs. They don't have jobs. They can't borrow money. They can't borrow money. They can't buy cars. We build cars. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. And yet you look at the automotive industry and how they have completely imploded in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. When I was working for General Motors and doing work for Toyota for General Motors, we told them, our engineers, my staff told them, you guys are going to go broke. Because you have good solutions on the table, but you are constantly opting for the low mileage, low performance as far as ecological performance and sipping gasoline performance, and you're constantly going for the high horsepower, high accelerating, low economy vehicles. You're going to go broke because the people are not going to support you. When gasoline gets to $3, $3.50, $4, they're going to start parking your SUVs.
Mm-hmm.
And the used car market is going to be bloated with vehicles. And that's exactly where we are. But the bigger picture is we have another industry that's even bigger than General Motors. And that's this industry that James is talking about, this war industry. They make everything from uniforms to tanks to bullets to sophisticated weapons. And he mentioned the orange alerts and the red alerts and all of that. How did we come about that? We came about that because one day we're walking down the street eating cookies and drinking milk, and somebody flew an airplane into one of our buildings. That changed everything. Whether you believe that happened or whether you believe it was totally CG'd on national news and we were completely duped into a self-serving 3,000-person to fuel up a government military again, whichever you believe, the conspiracy or the actual news reports. The fact remains that the airspace over the United States of America is sovereign. And in 7 minutes, we've got the former Minister of Defense, Nick Pope, for the UK. This is the equivalent of like the Secretary of State of our country looking at or should I say Secretary of National Defense or Homeland Security, looking at the airspace over the United States, saying, what is that 400-foot-long craft doing flying with no transponder? It's not telling anybody it's up there. It's just cruising around for 4 or 5 hours above one of the most important and economically powerful cities of the world. And yet, I'm going to play you clips, three quick audio clips now, and then we're going to bring Nick on and talk about them. Just to kind of put this in perspective for you, this is the UFO over New York. This is how it was covered on mainstream news.
Well, I wish I could give you an answer to this bizarre sighting. I really can't, but I can tell you that earlier today, there were dozens and dozens of people right here on 23rd and 8th. They were standing right here, and they were all in a stupor, just crowded together, looking into the sky. Now, I'm told by this street vendor that at about 9:30, there were these white specks that looked like stars. He said there were like hundreds of them. And then slowly, as the day progressed, they would disappear, so that by 4:30, there were none left. Imagine that. Now, take a look at up into the sky there. Do you see that white thing? To me, that looks like a scar. Looks like nothing to report. You're probably saying at home, fool, that is nothing. But I have to tell you that once my photographer zoomed in to that star, you could see that there was a tail to it. There were these blue flashing lights, and it looked like it was in a broken pattern. Now, was that anything? Was it what people saw earlier? I don't know. I can't tell you. But this guy who you're about to meet, who you're about to hear from, said that for 2.5 hours, he was standing here with his crossing guard, dumbfounded. He said, at first he thought it was a star, then he thought it was a Mylar balloon. In the end, he doesn't know.
So that's one of the clips, just to kind of help you put in perspective. This is one that appeared a little bit earlier than that. And this happened over Cleveland, about 780 miles away. This one will really blow your mind.
Yesterday in this hour, we told you about the mysterious lights that keep appearing over Lake Erie near Cleveland. Here is some home video of the lights that neighbors in the area say are unlike aircraft or helicopters that fly there. And last night, for the 8th night in a row, they said these lights were back, appearing around 7:30 p.m. and lasting about 2 hours. NASA has a lab in Cleveland called the Glenn Research Center. They test rockets and various aircraft, but say they haven't done any testing this week. A Pentagon official told me the U.S. military has not been testing anything recently in that area. And the FAA acknowledges the light pattern seems different from commercial flight paths in the area.
All right, so there is another sighting over Cleveland. Now, this news investigator did a good job. He went to the Pentagon. He went to the NASA base. And he asked them, you guys got anything going on up here? No, we don't. 8 nights in a row, those showed up. And then, again, in southern Illinois. We'll listen to this one really quick, and it'll be pretty close to time to having Nick come on.
My name is Melvin Knoll, and I'm a part-time truck driver, and I own this miniature golf course and also the go-kart track out here. That certain morning, I happened to look over into the sky to the northeast, and I seen a very, very bright light up there, like a very bright star. And then I said, well, that's moving. And I just stood there and watched it, what it was doing, and it was just coming down out of the sky real slow. And no noise, just quiet, and I couldn't see no wings or nothing, just floating right through the midair up there. And I thought, well, if I don't tell nobody that I've seen something go over town tonight, nobody will believe me tomorrow.
Knoll drove his truck to the Highland, Illinois Police Department to report an unidentified flying object heading toward the neighboring town of Lebanon.
Well, this is a switch call from Highland PD. Reference to a truck driver just stopped in and said there was a flying object in the area of Lebanon.
It's a joke, right?
No, this is not a joke.
And for now.
Ed Barton was the first police officer to respond to the call.
Be advised, there's a very bright white light east of town, and it keeps changing colors. It's heading westbound now. Matter of fact, if the shadow officer looks up, they can probably see it by now.
2550, I see something, but I don't know what that is.
At 4:23 a.m., police officer David Martin saw the UFO over a field on the outskirts of Shiloh.
I happened to look over and saw this large floating object that was just moving very slowly. It was probably about a football field in length. It had three large bright lights lighting up the sky underneath it. I honestly don't know what it was that I saw, other than I know it wasn't a plane or a helicopter or a blimp.
Police reported the object over Lebanon, over Shiloh, over Millstad, over Dupo. Detective Mark Lopino says he saw it as it approached O'Fallon, Illinois.
I was driving eastbound on Highway 50 when I see the object, the UFO, if you will. I first thought it was probably a bunch of helicopters flying in some type of formation. As I drew closer to it, I saw it start to cross over the roadway. It was unlike anything I have ever seen before. You could see the lights, and you could see something that they were attached to, and it was shaped like a triangle. I'm freaking out. I'm like, what the heck is this? So I continue, and it's going over these trees. By the time I get here toward the left turn lane, I duck into the left turn lane here, and I stop right about here. I wanted to listen to see if I could hear any type of engine noise. I could not hear anything. I tried to look again at the UFO, and it had already gone behind these trees. I put it in reverse to back up a couple seconds to see if I could reacquire it again. By the time I backed up, tried to see it, it had moved at least a mile away, if not further. That quick. I was just astonished. I didn't know what to say. I was speechless.
Six people, including five police officers, saw an object over southern Illinois that night. And they all describe what they saw as a massive triangular object flying in total silence.
All right, that's the audio from the one over Cleveland. Now, our guest coming on right now is Nick Pope. He's the former Minister of Defense for the United Kingdom. He is, of course, well known to our X Squared Radio listeners because he's been on this program before. And now he's well known to just about everybody in America because he has been an advisor to several mainstream news outlets on the subject of UFO disclosure. Welcome to the program, Nick.
Hello, thank you.
I'm so glad you showed up with us tonight. I know it's about 1 o'clock in the morning there in the UK. James Gilliland's on the program with me tonight. He runs a ranch and a training center in Trout Lake, Washington, where they have a lot of UFO activity. So he's quite used to this on another end of the spectrum. And one of the things that we're thinking about, Nick, with all of the mainstream coverage of UFOs appearing over major cities over the last year or so, I have been realizing finally that even though some of these appearances have lasted for minutes, hours, days, craft have gone from one town to another town, there are no military interventions. There are no Piper Cubs, no helicopters, no jets, no planes going up at all to get a closer look, to get a piece of video. Do you have any thoughts on this, Nick, why we would not be investigating real time?
Well, one issue is the question of whether or not these things are showing up on radar. And military people, in many ways, can be kind of one-dimensional when it comes to this. In other words, you can have something going on in our airspace, you can have reliable witness testimony, you can have multiple witnesses, you can have military personnel seeing these things, but if something's not on the radar, it's like, well, you know, it's not really a defense issue. So I think one possible explanation here is that we have a situation where people are seeing things, reporting things, but if it's not on the radar, we won't get jets in the air.
What about the news organizations? I mean, I haven't even seen a news helicopter take off and go up to try. This would be the video of the century if they could get footage up close of something like this.
It would be, but again, I think it's kind of sometimes quite helpful to try and so we'll almost talk this through in real time and say, well, how would that pan out? And, you know, you can sort of plot a timeline, really, and say, supposing somebody is, I don't know, duty officer at one of the mainstream news media organizations, and they get a call saying there's something really interesting happening, to give an order to scramble a helicopter, get something in the air and things. It takes time, and very often by the time somebody has even thought of making a decision, the story may be over.
Yeah, I understand that. I think this most recent sighting in New York is a particular one of interest to me because the sighting lasted several hours on up into the evening. And mainstream news went out to the site, turned their cameras skyward, both in the daytime and the nighttime, as well as El Paso, Texas, and reported on it, you know, news at six kind of style. So there was plenty of time to get, you know, some kind of aircraft in the air, 5,000, 6,000 feet in the air, to get a closer shot with a camera. I'm just blown away that there doesn't seem to be either the will to get it done, or perhaps there are other reasons as to why they're not going up and getting this extra information.
Well, I think there's a lot of inertia in the system sometimes. And it,
I agree with that.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, I'm you know, I'm not defending any of this, and I'm not pleased about any of this. I don't think, I mean, a lot of people are maybe thinking, well, come on, maybe there has to be some mainstream media complicity here. Maybe this is a cover-up. Maybe these people are sitting on this. That's not my take. I mean, my take is, and I've worked both sides of the fence. You know, I used to work for the government. Now I work as a mainstream journalist myself. I know a lot of these people. I know what drives them, what motivates them, how they work, how they think. Somebody would win the Pulitzer Prize over this. So, I mean, I'm not convinced that anyone knows about this and is sitting on it for whatever reason. I just think, and it's really sad to say, but I think there's a lot of inertia. I think there's a lot of people just maybe they have their preconceived belief systems, and this is outside it.
Yeah, that very well could be. Recently, Maslin Othman with the United Nations sort of self-appointed herself as the spokesperson or the ambassador of the UN to potential contact with alien races. I don't know how far that went with the UN. I don't think I was able to find a confirmation in any of my news researches. But what are your feelings about Ms. Othman claiming to be the ambassador to aliens?
Okay, here's the good news. I have absolutely the inside track on this story, not least because I met her 2 weeks ago and spoke to her personally about this. So, right, here's what happened. The Royal Society has held two discussion meetings this year. One back in January, which was entitled The Detection of Extraterrestrial Life and the Consequences for Science and Society. The second meeting was held 2 weeks ago right here in England, and it was called Towards a Societal Agenda on Extraterrestrial Life. Now, Dr. Maslin Othman, Professor Maslin Othman, pardon me, is director of the United States Office for Outer Space Affairs and the committee which services the Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. Her view was this. Look, there's a lot of people talking about alien life. Are we going to find it? How are we going to find it? What form might it take? Are we going to pick up a signal, like the SETI people say, search for extraterrestrial intelligence? Is it going to be a radio signal? Are astrobiologists going to find this? Are we going to find microbial life on Mars or Europa or somewhere? Or are we even going to have the archetypal White House lawn kind of scenario? We don't know. But this might happen. So, some questions arise. Who's going to announce this? Who speaks for planet Earth? If we pick up a signal, do we even reply? Stephen Hawking spoke about that recently. He said it might not be a good idea. He said, look at what happened when Columbus encountered the Native Americans. He said it didn't turn out too well for them. So, some big questions. And also the question of should we actively be transmitting signals to extraterrestrials. Professor Maslin Othman simply said maybe the United Nations would be the appropriate place to have this debate. Maybe the UN Office for Outer Space Affairs might be the body that would have a role here in facilitating these discussions. That's what happened. That got mistranslated by some of the media into ambassador for outer space. That's not what happened.
Well, yeah, I understand that. I actually have her speech for 50 seconds. I think I want to play part of it anyway, where she does say that very same thing. Who's going to speak for planet Earth? And she says it can't be, you know, President Obama. it's got to be somebody from the UN, and, you know, I'm the logical choice. That may or may not be, but who's going to tell the aliens?
Indeed. And this is precisely the debate that we had at the Royal Society two or three weeks ago. There was talk of this wonderful phrase, sages, who might be brought into the debate about if we pick up a signal, do we reply? If we do, what do we say? And there was talk of sages. And then somebody said, well, that's all very well, but what about the other 6 billion of us? Do we get a say?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a very good question. James,
I'd like to comment on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. Welcome, Nick. One of the things I find interesting, though, is like everybody is waiting for the officialdom to come forward and say, you know, yeah, they're here. We've made contact. UFOs are real or whatever. But the sad thing about that is they've always been here. They've been here since the beginning of time. And we're still waiting for somebody in the, you know, official capacity to tell us something that most of the planet already knows already. So, and we have to ask ourselves, well, who do these people represent? Obviously, they haven't been telling us the truth for a long, long time. And why do we keep giving our power overweight to these official positions, which have a long history of actually not telling us the truth? So, I mean, to me, that I find that just kind of ironic. It's that maybe it's time for people to do their own investigations, do their own, have their own experiences, get out and start watching the skies, get your equipment, you know, get your night vision goggles, and come up with your own conclusions, because we're definitely not hearing the truth. We haven't heard the truth from the official groups for God knows how long, and I'm sure Nick knows there's been a lot of cover up for a long time. I'm just wondering why these people keep saying we're the ones that are going to tell the people the truth, when they either are totally out of the loop and don't even know the truth, or they're part of that same group that's been holding back the truth for so long. And that really puzzles me.
Yes, well, I think that's a very interesting question. And again, one of the issues that came up at the Royal Society was this question of, I guess, how would you put this, empowerment in a sense. And one of the interesting things, I know there's a lot of tension between the UFO community and the SETI community. But one of the very interesting things that SETI has run for a while now, and this is very interesting, is something called Earth Speaks. And this was the idea that, again, you know, look, maybe it won't be the Secretary General of the United Nations. Maybe it won't be the President of the United States. Maybe if contact is made, I don't know, this idea that you might go over the heads of our leaders and go to the ordinary people. Again, back to this question, who speaks for planet Earth? And Earth Speaks was an idea to kind of engage the public and say, well, look, you know, what would you say? And it's very interesting. They've got a website. It's worth a look. There are some very poignant questions there. There's some very poignant statements about what people would communicate. There are some clever ones. There are some funny ones, again. I mean, one of my favorites is just this person who said something like, beware, we are deadly, and it is very boring here, so don't bother coming.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes out of the mouth of babes, you know.
Well, I like James's perspective, and I have to admit, I talk to the man on the street, and they say, look, you know, we had UFOs flying over the White House in 1953. This was headline news in the newspapers, and now we have mainstream media covering these craft in the air. But the one thing that the three of us realize at this moment, that none of them have actually stopped and said anything or made any attempt to communicate with us. They've flown over. They've sat up there. Maybe they've put some crop circles down in a wheat field over in Wiltshire, but they're not speaking to us. We're not communicating with them. And I've got to tell you, as long as we're down here on the street looking up in the sky, there's maybe a mild amount of anxiety. But you let them come close to the ground at New York, and then you watch the activity change. The anxiety level will go up, don't you think, James? Nick?
I'll let Nick handle that. I'll speak after Nick.
Okay, well, this, again, I think goes back to an issue that was quite contentious at the Royal Society. And this was the question of METI, as it's known, messaging extraterrestrials, active SETI. The idea that we wouldn't just listen for signals, but we would send our own messages. And, you know, a lot of scientists have said, well, maybe that's not a good idea, calling attention to ourselves in potentially a crowded and dangerous universe. But here's, I think, what the interesting thing is about all of this is that that there is this idea, the zoo hypothesis. You know, go back to the Fermi paradox. Where are they? You know, where is everyone? Why have we not been openly contacted? And there is perhaps the idea, and this was articulated quite nicely at the Royal Society, that maybe there are intelligences out there, more advanced than us, that wouldn't initiate contact, but might respond to it. This is a really interesting point, that we might become interesting. We might cross the threshold where we actually pick up the phone and dial out, as opposed to just listening.
Sort of like inviting the vampire in. You know, they can stay outside and fly out, but as around. But as soon as you invite them in, well,
yeah. I have that's say.
Yes, that's okay. The thing. It was kind of articulated almost a bit like us being the rats in the maze, going through looking for the cheese. We maybe become more interesting when we actually stop the experiment and start interacting with the people that put the cheese down. So the point was, look, you know, we can run through the maze as much as we like, but when we actually say stop, hey guys, listen, this is us. That's the point where they might start interacting with us. When the mice start squeaking, when the rats start talking to the experimenters, then they might stop the experiment and say, hey, you know, this is slightly more interesting than these guys running through the maze. They're squeaking at us. What are they saying? Yeah. And if this was happening anywhere else but the Royal Society, you might dismiss it. But it was happening at the Royal Society. And again, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that. Basically, sure. What I've seen that is a repetitive thing happening is that, one, the assumption that contact hasn't been made, and that nobody is talking to them, which isn't really something that I would like to agree about. And the other thing, too, is that they had the right track about a sage. Maybe have a sage or people who are, you know, have a long history of exhibiting, you know, a service to humanity, the earth, people who are enlightened or awake that have spiritual gifts and abilities. Those would probably be the ones you'd want to put in contact with these beings, because the majority of them are probably very spiritually and technologically advanced beings. And we have masters, saints, and sages here on Earth. And I've studied with some of them that can bilocate, disappear, reappear. They become non-physical beings right in front of your very eyes. They have telepathic abilities. They have some pretty incredible abilities. And these are just people here on Earth. So if you take an extremely advanced civilization, it's been around, you know, thousands, millions, billions of years more than we have. These would probably be an everyday thing, you know, as far as levitating and doing some of these other things. So that's been my experience. And I know here we've demonstrated contact for probably about 15 years redundantly. We've had Fox News out here. We've had Paranormal State come out here, and it's on record. We told them exactly when and where these ships would appear. And they did appear exactly when and where we said they would. So if you're looking at a skyline with 360 degrees and you tell them exactly, you know, the quadrant they're going to appear in, at what level, you have the cameras aiming right at them and they appear, then you've got something. Now, another thing, too, is that we had over 200 people here engage in an intention experiment to bring the ships in. That Brooks, you were there too as well, so you can testify to this. And John Riley was there, a locking engineer, and 200 other people were involved in this intention experiment at the Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference. Well, right after the intention experiment, this ship flew right over the conference building with everybody to see, filmed, videotaped. It's all over the internet right now, which demonstrates clearly that this contact is happening. There is an exchange. So it is happening, but the people like us and other people are actually pushed out of the UFO community or outside the loop, and nobody's asking us what's going on. We do have a lot of the information, which I think is sad, but I've seen there are contacts happening around the world. There's beautiful beings that are very awake, very enlightened beings around the world that are having contact, that are receiving information. And unfortunately, the information is kind of contrary to the status quo in some of these big organizations, because what they're saying is that we have to rise to the occasion. You know, if we are going to have contact, we have to have pure intent, open minds, loving hearts, and rise to the occasion, or they can't really work with this. So, you know, it's kind of a standard joke. Everybody says, why don't they land on the White House lawn? Well, they didn't rise to the occasion there. They're looking for, you know, intelligent life.
That is an interesting input. And yeah. I've heard it for a number of years. Now, Nick, of course, for most of his career, worked on the official side of that. Now he's working on the journalistic side of it. Nick, what are you seeing out there? Is it all, very cut and dried, or is there a spiritual aspect to this that people are trying to fit in?
There's certainly a spiritual aspect. I won't deny that. I'll put my cards on the table. That's not particularly the angle that I come from, and I sometimes have a difficulty with some of this idea that, you know, ETs are here and that we must raise our game and we must do that. And you know, my thing is, well, we are who we are, and I'm not going to make apologies for that. And yes, I'm sure I must modify my behavior, and I'm sure we could all do a little bit better. But I have difficulty sometimes with the idea that we must somehow raise our game and transform ourselves and, you know, live up to somebody else's agenda. We are who we are. We are what we are. And if we, you know, we can all do better, we can all live better lives, but if we change ourselves so much to fit in with somebody else's worldview, then we actually stop being humans. For all, you know, I come back to this phrase, I'm sorry to repeat it, but we are what we are, and if we change it too much, that's not us. We become, you know, it's a false economy.
Take us
how we are, faults and all, warts and all.
Yeah, well, there's one more thing I'd love to say, though. You know, basically, we are a very warring, aggressive race, and we are destroying our environment and destroying the planet, and we are not really behaving as well as we should be. So if you have a very advanced race of beings, if you have a violent monkey down there, they're just going to keep their distance from it. Now, if that monkey becomes peaceful and starts coming around and wants to hang out and find out what's going on, you know, we're going to give it a banana and we're going to hang out with it. So it's really simple. It's basically, we do need to kind of start behaving ourselves, start living in harmony with each other and the planet, and try to rise up and move in that direction. And they'll inspire us and assist us in doing so. But as long as we continue in this warring, aggressive, destructive behavior, we're a dangerous race and we're very hard to deal with. And why should they put themselves in harm's way? And why should they give us any more technology when we've totally abused what we already have?
I got
to agree with Nick on one respect, and that is traditionally, and then going back as anthropologically as far as you want to go, about 2 to 3, maybe sometimes 4% of the society does not obey any laws. They're outlaws. Now, fortunately, we have a very complex system of incarceration around the world, and we tend to keep the bad guys in jail. And that gives us some semblance of peace, unless one of them makes parole and comes out and does some more hooliganism. But generally speaking, people, 98% of the time, are law-abiding and benevolent to one another. Are we changing? Are we growing? Are we evolving? It's possible. And if we do change too much, do we stop being human? I don't know. I don't know, Nick. I think we can become more peaceful, especially as we learn to use technology to provide drinking water for everybody, to provide, you know, the basics of life for everybody. Maybe we would stop fighting over this small blue ball in the middle of the cold blackness of space.
I think there's definitely something to be said there. I think sometimes we are a little bit too self-deprecating. It's very easy to focus on the bad things, and perhaps the bad things are more newsworthy sometimes than the good things.
Yeah. But
the good things are still here. I mean, people do stop and give money to the homeless person. People do give to charity. Even in these times where people are struggling to put food on their own table, to put their own kids through college, I mean, this is a desperately poor time in terms of what's happening to the economy. And yet, we still, there is altruism that runs through our species. So
sure.
Every bad thing that happens, if you look, you can find a good thing. And I think, you know, it's all too easy sometimes to put ourselves down and not to focus on the fact that actually altruism is a big factor. Charity is a big factor. Goodness is a big factor. Sometimes we're not as bad as we like to kind of make ourselves out to be.
Well, I agree. I'm not talking about the everyday citizen. If you talk to almost, you know, me, I live in a very strong Baptist community, loggers, ranchers, and things like that. But you get them one-on-one, you talk to them, they say, you know, yeah, sure, there's probably beings out there. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be shooting at them, or that's not, doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And most people I talk to are really curious. They want to know. They don't want to treat this with aggression or anything else. But unfortunately, the people that are in charge seem to be going about this in a very primitive manner. And that's my point, is that we do have certain corporations and things like that are in charge of things on the planet that are doing some very destructive, harmful acts to humanity, Earth. And those are the ones that are going to take charge of the situation. So there needs to be a separate, completely separate group of more enlightened people, just basically good people to make these contacts. And I've always said we need, the whole planet needs some kind of a truth and reconciliation board to do something with some of these other groups that are just wreaking havoc on the planet.
It could be. Maybe we'll put that together. Nick, do you have time for one telephone call?
Sure thing.
All right. Mark from Ohio, you're on X Squared Radio. Welcome to the program. Mark, are you there? I know he's been on hold for a while, so I wanted to make sure that he's out there. Going once.
Fantastic story from the 2001 disclosure video where Major George Filer stated that in 1978, on January 18th, at Fort Dix in New Jersey, an extraterrestrial craft had landed. An extraterrestrial got out of the craft and then was shot by one of our security police at the Air Force Base. And I wondered if you guys could comment on that statement.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. I remember the 2001 May press conference from the Disclosure Project, and I remember this testimony. It was very profound. I don't doubt that it happened. I think it's unfortunate that somebody would be so insecure that they would pull a trigger on anybody, especially if they're you know, defending themselves and not being threatened. But I would like to get Nick's thoughts on that. You know, Nick investigated well over 20,000 interactions between the military craft, news craft, and ordinary citizens in the UK, went through all of that data for most of his career. So he's probably pretty well qualified to answer this question. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, in a sense, I was probably going to drive a coach and horses through that by saying right at the outset, I don't know whether that incident happened or not. I think, as with all this, very often we're dealing with testimony. And in evidential terms, it's very difficult to say. You can say, well, this person sounds respectable. They seem to have a background that checks out. But essentially, when someone then tells you an account, it is just testimony. It's a story. And in evidential terms, it's very difficult to put weight onto that. I think what is interesting is this. It speaks to a fear response. And of course, it's something that we've seen mirrored in science fiction. That response, that exact scenario, is very much the central premise of the great sci-fi movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still. What was that, 1951, and of course the more recent remake with Keanu Reeves. That fear reaction, That instinctive, if it's different, if it's unknown, we should fear it. We're repelled by it. We fight against it. Is very interesting and powerful, and we have to somehow maybe get through that and embrace the difference, embrace diversity. It's a big universe out there, and I think, you know, one of the things that, again, people like Frank Drake have speculated, there might be 10,000 communicable civilizations in our galaxy alone, and they're not all going to be like us. And I think we have to kind of get used to that idea. We have to deal with it, and we have to maybe find a way of incorporating that into our worldview.
I couldn't agree more. Nick, I really appreciate you coming on the program, and I got to tell you, I really appreciate your presence on the mainstream news. It lets me know someone out there with real experience is being consulted. You bring a very level head to the game, and I appreciate your expertise.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too.
All right, we're going to let Nick go now because it's very early in the morning for Nick, and he's got a long day tomorrow. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right, Mark, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, James and I are going to be here for the rest of the night. Not kidding. We're kidding. We're going to be here for two more hours, but it's going to seem about 20 minutes probably. We have a lot to talk about. I just love the fact that Nick could come on the program. He was on X Squared Radio about a year and a half ago before he got, he was still a Minister of Defense in the UK, and he just got, recognized as this world expert, and he's been contributing to the mainstream news, several different organizations, CNN, of course in the UK, Fox News. And it's really a breath of fresh air to see in the mainstream news. Now, Mark, you are talking about disclosure. So what are your feelings about that? Do you think we're making a good stab at it here? Do you think the mainstream news is finally doing their duty and reporting on these great things?
Well, I think we're hearing a lot of interesting things, like this Gliese 581 was discovered, this star that seems to have planets that can support life, and then we hear about a craft over a runway in China or over an airport that shut down the airport for a while. But with shows like The Event and with V, I think some of this is going to get spun into the hostile alien invasion kind of thing. So anyway, that's kind of my thoughts on it, and I didn't want to take up too much of your time, but I also would wondered if James could talk a little bit about some of the benevolent contacts, particularly that have occurred in the past, like Howard Menger, George Adamski, or Billy Meyer, and I'll go ahead and get off the line and let another caller get in, and I appreciate you letting me on the show, Dr. Agnew.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mark. We really appreciate your input.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, there is a lot of benevolent contact happening, and unfortunately, the news isn't picking up, you know, what's going on the benevolent side. They're mainly focused on, you know, the things that have more fear and suspense, or military, or close encounters with planes or pilots or things like that, you know, and going into a more sinister, threatening, or negative approach. And it's kind of sad. It does seem to be turning the corner now. And unfortunately, I didn't meet some of these pioneers of ufology that he's talking about, but I have looked at their work, and a lot of it, definitely, I do believe something was happening there. I don't know how much of it that they could really comprehend, because it's always much bigger than our own minds can wrap around it, what's happening.
Well, but, one of the things that I like, James, we have, as you said, pioneers, and as Mark was saying, individuals that have gone out there, taken incredible footage, or talk about amazing personal contacts that they've had with ETs. But what you do at eSETI is something I've never heard of being done anywhere else, at least not in an organized fashion and in a consistent and reliable fashion. You bring individuals together from all over the world at least once a year at your location there in Trout Lake, and then a couple of times facilitated by some technology that our Lockheed Skunk Works friend John Riley put together. We focus human intention on a grand invitation, an opening to these benevolent beings who may be flying overhead. And then, like stimulus and response, it happens very reliably.
And that's the thing. It's that, see, basically there's two parts to what's happening here. The first one is public acclamation to say, hey, okay, they're here. They're here. Here's the evidence. We have 15 years of intense activity here, footage of these ships doing everything imaginable, going right at each other, reversing directions, morphing from 1 to 4, landing, responding to the people on the ground, powering up, lighting up the whole group, the field, and, with an incredible energy release that people feel. Like when William Henry is here, this huge ship came over, and Renato Lungato was there, and he filmed it as well. And actually four came in right in a row, but the first one came in and powered up and lit the sky up. And I asked Henry, I said, did you see it? And he said, what do you mean see it? He goes, I felt it. And so there's an exchange that happens especially with those people who are sensitive. There's an energetic exchange that happens. And I can go further into this, but it's very complicated. But there is a transference of consciousness and energy. There's a telepathic exchange. People are totally transformed when they have these experiences. And when they open up and have this experience, they go, well, wait a second. If this is real, what else have I been lied to about her? And it really starts a very intense process of awakening and healing. And our whole focus is more on the awakening and healing of humanity, the earth. We take a spiritual approach to this process, which is why we've been so successful. And I do believe that, Nick's work and the other people's work and the Disclosure Project, all that's a necessary component of this. But one thing that's missing there, and it might be a series of steps involved, is that all of these people in the Disclosure projects have been here. And they know the ships are here, and they've seen them themselves. So they've all been here. They know the ships are here. They know contact is ongoing. But they're focusing more on the credentialed FAA heads, pilots, military personnel, things of that nature to give it credibility, which I understand. I mean, that is a process to take people from step A to step B, but we're at step Z basically.
We should do. We should invite, now that the mainstream news is not so embarrassed about reporting on this kind of thing, we should invite out to eSETI for that Pulitzer.
Oh yeah, yeah. Now we did invite them, and actually Fox News came out here and they aired this on Hannity, believe it or not. And they gave it a pretty, they started off with a little hype, on the ancient passed in Area 51, and they showed the green or the grays, you know, and that nonsense, which we don't really interact with. And then they shifted it to what happens here. And when they came here, I don't think they were real serious in the beginning about covering this. And then when they got here and the ship started appearing, all of a sudden they're going, holy smokes, what do we do with this? That it is happening. It is real. And they got their own footage, and I gave them some phenomenal footage, but they didn't air that. They always air the more ambiguous stuff and goes, okay, you decide, you know, but the ships did come. They did come on time. BBC came out here with Danny Dyer, and they did a whole special. He said he was on UFO overwhelm after coming here. And he went to all the other UFO major groups and didn't really have much of an experience. He said he didn't see anything until he came here. And when he came here, he went on overload. There were so many ships. And he had a life-changing experience. And, you know, speaking of life-changing experiences, I know you had one of those while you're here, too, as well. So
yes. We're going to cover that. You know, that, you know, even when we read in the scriptures, we read in the writings of the sages and philosophers, Buddha and even Muhammad, how you can tell when you've had a contact with an angel, a higher being, a master, a teacher, is how your life changes after that encounter. Uh-huh. If you become, you know, schizophrenic and violent and you constantly want to go on jihad, I would say you're probably not talking to the God of the New Testament.
Yeah.
Old Testament maybe, but not New Testament. Yeah. but if you have a life-changing experience and you begin to heal others, you begin to have feelings of magnanimity toward one another, concern, mercy, open-mindedness, generosity, abundance toward one another, I would say you've probably had an encounter with a higher being, maybe an angel of old, what they might be called today, might be ETs or higher masters or ascended beings or ascended masters. I think you agree with me on that.
Oh, definitely. You know, and one thing that's happening here is that now this is going to go off the deep end a little bit for some people, but I don't mind, you know, being the pioneer out there and taking the arrows because I really don't care what people think about me. You know, so I've gone far beyond that. But we've had master teachers here, and we just had a monk here from Japan, wonderful guy named Khan, and he teaches some very ancient techniques, Tibetan techniques and enlightenment, you might say, and Yigong and some of these other, the very ancient techniques. He's very mastered at a lot of these. And he was like an undefeated street fighter and, you know, in Japan, and he shifted into the peaceful end of it and had this huge awakening. And he spends a lot of his time in a cave meditating, you know, dark 21-day, no food retreats. And so he can see the other dimensions and what's happening here. Well, he came to the ranch and he was in, it started out first. He came to the ranch and he just loved it here. He's like this big giant samurai warrior, just full of love and light, beautiful being. Comes here and he's always walking around barefoot. Doesn't matter how cold it is, in a t-shirt, you know, he's hilarious. And in the middle of the night, you know, 3 a.m, he's out walking around, you know, looking at all the activity here and checking it out. Well, he got a picture in the field. Now, this is really bizarre. In the field, all of these light spheres started coalescing and came together, and then they formed an image. An undeniable image of Kuan Yin appeared to him in the field, and he actually took his cell phone and photographed it. And at the time, there were investigators here, two of them from Japan, and they looked at his cell phone, they looked at his camera. Everything checked out, the date that he took the picture, everything. And we have that on the website at eSETI.org. And then I asked him, I said, can you meditate on Kazekiel, this being I work with quite a bit, which is one of the first contactees, Ezekiel of the Bible, where he talks about a shiny disc coming out of the firmament with bronze feet like calves and fire and brimstone coming out from underneath it. And when it landed, it sounded like a thousand rushing rivers, you know, with cherubim wheels within wheels with flashing lights coming out of it. Now, that's pretty obvious today when we hear that. Well, that was an encounter. So ET encounter. But I can go further with that. But so I asked him, I said, can you meditate and invite him to come in and take a picture of him with your cell phone? Because all I see is a giant gold ball of energy when it comes to me. And everybody just gets completely blissed out when it comes. And so he did, and he takes a photograph, and here's this giant gold ball of light with wings on it. And behind it is this crystalline city. And this is, you know, you've been out to the field here. It's a field of echinacea. There's nothing there. You know, it's just an open field. So he takes this picture. And then he goes and sees a light appearing outside his room. So he takes, now he has a camera because somebody was wise enough to give him a camera after him seeing him get the other two photographs. And now he takes a picture of this beautiful blue light appearing in front of him. And out of this blue light steps Mary, Mother Mary, you know, and he gets a photograph of her. And so we're all just blown away by these photographs that he's taking, you know, incredible. And this isn't Project Bluebeam. I can tell you why. There's more to it. So basically we're all sitting there. I go, God, I would just love to see Mary's face a little clearer. I mean, you can see her face, but it was kind of fuzzy because it's in another dimension and beautiful woman appearing, but it wasn't really detailed. And so I was teaching a teacher's training in a self-mastery class, and he's in the class, and in the middle of the class, we feel her come in. Her energy comes again. People are sighing, having openings, healings, crying. Amazing energy came in, and he sees her again. He takes his camera, takes a picture, gets a very clear picture of her. And then after that, he goes outside and the next night and gets a picture of these feline beings that are 12 feet tall that appear to him, that are six-dimensional feline beings. And what I'm trying to say is, I was talking earlier about rising to the occasion. There is an extreme spiritual component to this experience. And people who have gotten beyond the personality, gotten beyond the body, and realized they're spiritual beings, and they have the ability to move up the vibrational continuum and experience these other planes and dimensions, are the ones that really know what's going on. And those are the ones that we should be putting in charge of contact with these other beings, because they know how to heal unseen negative influences. They know how to master their own self-authority. They know how to really work within these energies and determine who's who in the universe. So that is, it all ties together. When you look at the big picture and you do the research, we can't hang on to this 1% of the reality that we can measure, this nuts and bolts program that everybody's trying to hang on to, when there's another 99% out there manifesting. And there are people that are aware of this other 99%, understand it, and know how to embrace it.
Well, you know, you talk about this energy flowing out to all kinds of people. There is a recent song that came out. It's by a band called Civil Twilight, and it's gotten some airplay. It's I don't think understood by a lot of people. So I'm going to read the words to it. I'm going to play it. During that time, we will take a short musical break because we're way over time for our first hour. We just hosed all of our affiliates, but that's fine. This is internet radio, and we can do what we want to do because it's free press. So I'm going to read the lyrics of this amazingly inspirational song that was received by this three-man band, and I'm going to play this for you, and then we'll be right back after this. Here are the words. One of these days... And by the way, the song is called Letters from the Sky. Mm-hmm. One of these days, the sky's gonna break, and everything will escape, and I'll know. One of these days, the mountains are gonna fall into the sea, and they'll know that you and I were made for this, that I was made to taste your kiss. We were made to never fall away. Never fall away. One of these days, letters are going to fall from the sky, telling us all to go free. But until that day, I'll find a way to let everybody know that you're coming back. You're coming back for me. Because even though you left me here, I have nothing left to fear. These are only walls that hold me here. Hold me here. The only walls to hold me here. One day soon, I'll hold you like the sun holds the moon. And we will hear those planes overhead, and we won't even have to be scared. We won't have to be scared. You're coming back for me. Here we go. Second half of X Squared Radio tonight. coming to you live October 24th, 2010 from Western North Carolina. By the way, Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel is now out in print. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you can also get it Kindle and Nook. And if you buy it from our website, rememberingthefuturebook.com, you will get the autographed version of the book, plus you'll get the entire book in audio for free as a download. So if you go to rememberingthefuturebook.com and order, you can get that. A couple of things coming up. Tomorrow night, for those of you on the West Coast, I will be on Coast to Coast AM with George Noory. We'll be talking about the book Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. We'll be giving a Hollow Earth update, and we'll be talking a little bit about electric vehicles. Also, I would go ahead and make your plans for next November. Not this November. We're talking about 11-11-11. You need to be in Louisville, Kentucky at the Pythagoras Conference. You can go to X Squared Radio, click on the banner, and get signed up early. This is going to be 20 of some of the most dynamic leading speakers in the nation. I don't know if you know it, James. You're going to be one of the speakers. So you're going to be coming out to Louisville in November of 2011 on 11-11 and addressing one of the largest paranormal audiences in the Midwest. We don't usually get this kind of programming in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. We usually get it on the West Coast or East Coast, maybe down toward Florida sometimes, but never in the Midwest. We're smack dab in the middle of 73% of the population of the country, and they are clamoring for access. So we're going to provide it. We've got over a year to prepare, so get a hold of that. Also, if you're trying to put some, you know, survival or emergency supplies together, don't forget to visit our affiliate, 1-800-PREPARE.com. Our friend Paul Faust and his EMT firefighter friends have put together one of the best emergency preparedness websites out there. If you put my name in, Brooks, you'll get an extra 10% off. No, I don't make any money off of it. It's just for you to help you get prepared. If you buy something from them, you can do so with confidence. It will last for 25 years. Set it and forget it. Emergency preparedness. That's what I call it. Put it in a book bag, put it by the door in the trunk of your car, and now you will not be a burden upon emergency personnel. Also, if you're going to buy the book Remembering the Future, you need to have a CD to go with it. That CD is from my teacher, Maureen St. Germain, who teaches the Flower of Life meditation. The audio CD will walk you through the meditation that's mentioned in the book. And occasionally we get very special mutual friends of ours, James and I, and we have one on the phone right now. Ramon is calling from Japan. Welcome to the program, Ramon.
Ohayo gozaimasu. Good morning, and good evening, and good night.
How you doing, Ramon?
Good. I'm glad to be able to talk to both of you gentlemen. It's been a while since I've seen you.
Yeah, you should tell the audience about some of the experiences you've seen here as far as the ships.
Well, as far as the experience I've had up at East SETI, I would have to start with using the word, the adjective, amazing. It's like James said before, it's not so much what you see, it's what you feel, what you go through. And some of it can actually seem very negative, and I'll explain what I mean by that. Negative in this, it'll seem negative in the sense that when you step on the ranch, forget about the UFOs, when you step on the ranch, all your crap comes up. So that's what I mean by it seems negative, right. But actually it's not. It's a great thing, you know, because you're releasing all these emotional toxins. So I just saw so many people that weekend just really hit the wall really hard. And I know James would just chuckle on the side and you know, oh, they're going through their stuff. So But as far as experience, that night with the 200 people and the experiment, I had such, you gentlemen were outside at that point looking at the ship. I didn't need to see the ship. I didn't see it physically, but I felt it really slapped the crap out of me, the ship, because the amount of energy that was hitting that room, because we were practicing Kunlun after everybody went outside, so there was a smaller group. And people were just really going through it really, really hard, really going through the washroom. But as far as here in Japan, it hasn't stopped. It's not like, you know, you go to Isetti, you go through this, and then you come out and you go back to life. You can't, even if you try to. You really can. I'll tell you a quick story. I was standing outside, and, you know, of course, being in Japan, the light pollution, you can't really see as many stars the same as New York. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, my eyes, for about a second at the most, went into night vision mode. And it was a scout ship. And I call it a scout ship because it was a smaller, it wasn't as big as a UFO, and it was round, looked like a ball. And I saw it for a second, and then my eyes went back to normal. I was like, okay, did I just imagine that? Did I hallucinate? What just happened? Because I've never heard of it, and it's completely new to me. Has something like that ever happened to you, gentlemen, or heard of something like that?
Yeah, definitely, yes. If they want you to see them, they can arrange it, and they have incredible abilities, and they open up a line of sight to you, and you could actually have that experience and see them where nobody else would. And they have some pretty amazing abilities to choose who sees them and who doesn't see them. And as you're saying, once you're connected to them, it doesn't matter where you go, they seem to be appearing in your neighborhood and continue to work with you, inspire you, and assist you in your awakening and healing process.
The other thing I wanted to say, it's so true how you say the like mind. What is it? The mind you seek is the mind you find?
Yes.
So I, you know, I've been practicing Kunlun ever since the first year I went to Isetti. Mm-hmm. And here I found a group that practices, and I met up with them. And the funny thing is, you know, we sit down after the meditation, we start talking, and one of them has been to the ranch, Chie. I don't know if you remember her.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody starts talking about their contacts or their dreams. And it just seems like it's more and more people are being contact or are making the contact or picking up the phone, for lack of a better word. And one guy was just so open, James. I'm trying to convince him to go this summer over there. He's just so open. According, when we were practicing the Kunlun, I can feel his energy so strong where I couldn't stop laughing. And I can feel his personal energy. This guy is really open. But anyway, he says to me that anybody who makes contact, their aura gets marked with the species they've made contact. And that's why when somebody like you, for example, you make contact with one species, all of a sudden everybody starts visiting you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can see that your aura, oh, this person, we can talk to him because he's had experience already. He's not going to freak out.
He's made contact already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I wanted to get your opinion, whether is that true or not, that your aura gets marked.
Well, I would say definitely there's an energy signature that happens. And like with us, with me, I've contacted so many different beings. I have the energy signatures of so many different beings with me that, and I have the ability to actually put people in contact with their main teacher and guide and access where they've come from, where they've been, There's a lot of people in their souls are more Pleiadian, or they're more from the Syrian. You know, they've had bodies just like the Avatar beings and things like that. That's why that movie went over so well, because it triggered ancient memories in people when they used to walk, you know, right alongside these beings. So anyway, there's definitely a signature that happens. I call it a stream of consciousness, or a line. It's almost like a spiritual line of contact or communication that happens. And definitely, yeah, you know, we just, you know, this whole weekend I've been doing counselings and putting people in touch with these energies and open them up to their past and helping them to understand why they're here now. And I'm seeing over and over again, people coming here are part of this grand awakening and healing process, and they're totally connected to these different species, these different beings, which are all interacting right now on our behalf.
There's a little bit of scientific data to back this up, Ramon. I recently read a book about gray aliens and I'll put it this way. The title of the book was put on there by the publisher, and it's not very agreeable with the writer. The writer's name is Nigel Kerner, K-E-R-N-E-R. And he says that the grays are more or less biological robots. They have very fine kind of gold wire infrastructure upon which is laid organic material, and their DNA is degrading over time, but they're kind of a self-preserving, soulless being that's looking for a spiritual hitchhike, as it were, so that they can perpetuate their lives. They're more ancient than you can imagine, but they don't have a soul, and they are going to expire one day and not be able to live on. One of the things that Nigel points out in his book is that it appears that the grays, in their sojourn around the universe, have noticed that there's a group of beings that has this energy signature that James is talking about. And they notice that as these beings pass away in mortality, they show back up again in mortality. Their energy signature lives on. And that's what fascinated them, and that's why they're here on the earth, and that's why they follow certain bloodlines and try to get a handle on figuring out how to piggyback onto this energy signature that goes with the human soul. And I just thought, although, you know, not everything in his book I agree with, certainly, there's always controversy, but I did pick up on the point that there's an energy signature that is peculiar to each individual intelligence, and that we are probably, well, we are much older surviving beings, whether we have been mortal over and over and over again, or whether we've been a spirit being all these eternities and now we're mortal, and soon this mortal body will die and then we'll be spirit beings again, which a lot of religions believe, or whether we do incarnate over and over again in different ages and different bodies and different planets, if that's what's needed, in order to gain perspective and gain wisdom. And there are a lot of religions that believe that as well. So I just thought I would throw that in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, it's been, I gotta say, it's been an amazing journey, because the funny thing is, if I would have spoke to you gentlemen maybe 10, 12 years ago, I would have just been, these guys are a bunch of kooks, and just left you guys alone. So, of course, you always hear what you need to hear when you need to hear it.
Right. Well, James alluded to, just before the break, the fact that I had had an experience that he said, and I can recount that now. Because it fits. I was that stuck in the mud, you know, 8 to 8 engineer that worked a standard 12 hours a day, 8 days a week, on various engineering and scientific projects. Yes, I was a religious being. I went to church every Sunday, still do from time to time. I know the scriptures backwards and forwards, can teach them and can still learn from them. But I really didn't have an opinion on the eternality of the soul or the presence of other beings on this planet. That is, until August 17th, 2006. Everything changed that day. And I don't know that I changed so much as I awakened, because what and who I was after I was 9 years old is who I re-became at age 52. Somewhere in between, that being went to sleep and became human, totally. And after age 52, the being woke up and realized that it is much more than human. And I think many of us are. But that experience that night was quite something, because I had been reintroduced to meditation. I had taken transcendental meditation when I was younger, and I got good at it and certainly could empty my mind and relax with the best of them. As life gets busy and adolescence turns into young adulthood and then responsibilities, meditation kind of got put on the back shelf and then disappeared out of my life. But it got reawakened by a teacher there at James's back in 2006. And I was meditating that night, that Saturday night. I was going to speak the next day. In fact, I think I was the final speaker of the conference. And a strange thing happened, because I was in the upper room, which was called the computer room. It just had a small bed in it that faced Mount Adams. And I was meditating on the end of that bed, and there were some friends in the room. We weren't alone, and we were all meditating. And the mountain evidently connected with me, and I'll just recount it as first person as I can. While I was in a meditation, I felt like something was tapping me on my chest, not like a finger, but more like a pillow, something tapping me or at least brushing me over and over again. And I thought maybe it was my heart. So I said, okay, I'll do a quick body check. All the muscles in my body, everything's nice and relaxed. No, it's not my heart. It was coming from outside my body. And then this tube, like a big plexiglass tube, 6 or 7 inches in diameter, connects to my chest like a big, you know, fire hose. And this sound begins, like unbelievable 10,000 voices singing like a chorus, and every harmony that you can imagine, even ones just out of the human hearing, they seem to add some resonance to it, became present to me. And I thought, oh, James, he must be playing some music, you know, downstairs. But this sound was not coming through my ears. It was coming through my heart, where this tube was connected to the mountain. And then I perceived that it was actually not just a chorus of nothing. It was a chorus of words. And the words were very long, drawn out, one word for maybe a minute and a half, and then it stopped, and another word for a minute and a half, and it stopped. And the three words were peace, love, and joy. And it repeated itself three times, and then it went silent. Now, this process probably took, 15 minutes, which is a long time when you're meditating. And then it ended. And then this single voice out of the blue, wasn't my voice, said, because you are quick to forgive, you are forgiven. And the tube disconnected from my chest like a pressure hose. I mean, I decompressed when this thing disconnected from me, and I jolted out of my meditation, took a deep breath, and of course my friends around me was like, you know, wow, what's going on? Are you having a heart attack? I said, no, did you see that? Did you hear that? And one of my friends with me, Robin, had her hand on my shoulder trying to comfort me, and this is in the dark before I jolted out of this, and she noticed, as she put her hand on my shoulder there, that there was another hand over the top of her hand, and it was gold in color. And she noticed that when she moved her hand back and forth, that the gold hand followed her. And although that was somewhat amusing, the next thing really amazed her, because as she looked at my back, she noticed that there were gold plates, tablets, schematics, drawings, maps, going into my back. They were showing up on my back and then disappearing into me. And mentally, she said, look, slow down. I can't see all this. I will never remember this. And so they slowed down for a minute, and then they sped right back up again, like time was of the essence. She realized that she's having an out-of-body experience, and the novelty of that, she says, wow, I'm having an out-of-body experience. I told myself if I ever have one of these, I'm going to go see my sister in Detroit. So she goes sailing out of the room and slams right into the wall of the room. And this voice comes to her, this is not about you. Hang around. Go back in. So she slams back into her body and witnesses this whole thing. So that's her experience. The next morning, we hook up with Tanya Maidenford, who is visiting the area and was spending some time with James on the other side of the house. And the candles were pulsating as they were sitting up talking or meditating. And she said, wow, are we having an earthquake? And James said, no, that's just energy coming from the mountain. That happens all the time. But it was pulsing at the same rate that the tapping was occurring on my chest. So this energy was witnessed by three people besides myself. And I'm telling you, when I got home, my kids know me. I have four kids, two boys and two girls, and they said I was different from that day forward. And it hasn't changed back. It's now 2010. That was 2006. We are on a new path, and it is an enlightened path, and it is a very powerful path. And I've got to tell you, my professional career, my writing, my ability to do what it is I dreamed of doing when I was a young boy is all coming alive around me because of that experience at James. And it's very powerful, and I will never forget it as long as I live.
Yeah, I can definitely testify to that one, because there was a when we were in here, the candles were not only moving, that they're on, you know, they had these stone holders, and all of a sudden they're vibrating. They just started moving all over the room, and I was kind of worried about them taking off or falling, you know, and starting a fire or something. So I had to actually grab one of them, because it was just moving by itself all over, you know, and the whole house was vibrating. You could feel the entire house was vibrating.
James, didn't we talk to, it was Giorgio, and I cannot remember her name, outside the house. They were camping outside the house, and they said a light ship came over, and it was pulsing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's pretty common. I know when they sent the beam that hit me in the chest, there was a huge golden ship right outside the house. And, that was witnessed by people that were camping. And so they seem to correspond, both from the ships and from the mountain itself. Now, there's something new that's just happened here that you're going to love. And I'm not going to tell where this is, but we found a place that has been under snow and ice for years and years and years. And due to changes, you know, and some of the glaciers that are gone here that used to be here, we've had hardly any snow up there. And so there's been a major melt off. Well, we took a small plane and flew around there. And what we were going to do is prove to people that where these ships are appearing and moving up and down the mountain and moving all over the mountain are pure ice, cliffs, lava, giant lava rocks, terrain. There is no way you could take any vehicle whatsoever over this terrain. It would have to be an anti-gravity or hovercraft or something of that nature. And it's not a helicopter, because you would hear it and you'd see the flashing lights on it and the strobe. So these are one bright light, and actually Robert Salas was just here a couple weeks ago, and he saw the same thing, got to experience it. But so we went up there flying around this area, very close. A good friend of ours, Brent, took us up in his plane. He has a beautiful little plane, and flew right next to the mountain, very close, and filmed this mountain. Well, what happened was, as we looked at the footage of where these lights are appearing, in two different places. One of the places has two massive caves, which seem to have just now made themselves known. What looks like caves, it's just a real dark area and opening. And then in front of this cave is this massive Buddha.
Really?
It looks like a carved Buddha out of the lava rock.
Wow. Yeah.
So now that's something amazing. I can send you a photograph of that. I don't really want to reveal where this is because I don't want people going up there and messing things up. But it's quite interesting. There's so much more going on here. But, going back to the story, we've been having contact here, as you've seen, for over 20 years, but intensely for 15 years. And I think it's kind of, to me, it's a little frustrating but understandable that the powers that be, who have exhibited a long history of, not working in the highest and best good of humanity, Earth, and not telling the truth, and not are the ones who are set up in these positions saying, we're going to make this contact, the contacts are going through them. And a lot of those groups have already been contacted by the low-level contacts, and they know the ships are here. They know the UFOs exist. They're very aware. And anybody in any agency that's in the loop knows that UFOs are real, and there's been a major abduction program and trades for technology and genetics. They're fully aware of this. So, to me, it's like, why are we asking these people to come and tell us the truth and giving them the power to hold these positions that are going to disseminate this truth, knowing that they've lied to us for so many years and have a strong history of twisting the truth and turning it or fashioning it in a way that's going to be on their behalf, some way that they can use this program on their behalf and not on behalf of the people.
Well, I mean, don't the people have a choice whether or not to be abducted, whether or not to be to accept an abduction? Are we, as we mentioned in the first hour, are we inviting them in by this open will to contact, or are these simply genetic invasions where these beings are coming in and impregnating women and taking their fetuses and taking samples and from men? And is there truth to the rumor or to the assertion that some hundreds of thousands or even millions of people are abducted and are not returned to the earth?
Yeah, that part I don't really know a lot about. I know definitely the abduction scenario is a reality. I know from people in the know that I've talked to some very high people in those programs, that were part of the Black Ops programs and things like that, and that they were very aware of the trade for human genetics for technology that our own government did. So our government actually did say, yeah, go ahead and snag some people, get what you need and for the technology. And so that was definitely going on. And to me, I don't think if somebody had a say-so in it, I don't know why anybody would agree to that. I don't think they were given the say-so or even given the opportunity to decide whether or not they would be part of that experiment. It was just done. And to me, I have an issue with that, with trespassing on free will and things like that. But then again, people will say, well, on a soul level, you knew it was going to happen and you agreed to this and things like that. And then, that may be the case, but I think on every level, we need to honor free will. Even on the physical level, there should have been, I know there's people who would say, hey, you're a dying race. I don't mind helping you out. I'll give you a little bit of my seed, no problem. There are people that probably would have said, yeah, I don't mind helping out. Let's do it, but to take them against their will and create all of that trauma, the emotional trauma, I think is not really, proper means of conduct. And, the higher beings too don't agree with this either. The Pleiadians, the Arcturians, the Andromedans, and some of the Sirians, there's an Orion Council of Light out there. They're not really happy on what's happened with these low level contacts. And so they are coming in right now, and that's coming to a close. And what we're seeing right now is the more benevolent ones are putting an end to the low level contacts, there's at least three groups out there that are kind of creating problems on the planet right now that are being ushered out, so to speak.
Well, when we talk about the government, you know, go ahead, Ramon. You were going to say something?
No, I was going to say, I heard, 2 points. I heard a story where, a woman who was constantly being abducted, I can't remember who she was. Anyway, she was being constantly abducted, and I guess she started hearing about these higher level beings, and she called one of them in, and they came in, and they pushed all these grays out the house. Mm-hmm. Like, she came in a flash of light, and with, like, I don't know if it was a beam of light the way she was describing it, and just pushed them out the house easily. And she was never ever abducted again.
Yeah, well, that's a common experience.
I was going to say that, you know, the Constitution does not give the federal government very much power. It mostly affords it to the states, and then the states can share what it wants with the federal government. But the one thing the federal government is tasked to do in the Constitution is to provide for the common defense. Mm-hmm. And if we have outside forces, I'll call them, coming into our neighborhoods, into our homes, into our remote areas, and abducting citizens, and against their will, doing medical things to them or whatever they want to do to them against their will, this is exactly what the government is tasked to protect us against. This is why in the beginning of our program tonight I asked the question, if we have these craft appearing, and now it does seem that they are, in daytime, in nighttime, on mainstream news, why is there no military effort to protect us against their presence? Now, there are only three possible answers. One is that they're complicit and they know what's going on. Two, they're outclassed and they don't want to go up and be shown up among in front of people and in the mainstream news. They'd rather do it in a clandestine fashion in the middle of the night or with the stealth aircraft or with special radar or radio weapons. Or C, they're not ETs at all. They're us. And they're staging some kind of grand theater to try to prepare us to empower them to increase their military might into space. That's the only three things that it could be.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, go ahead.
No, go ahead, James.
Well, basically, here's another thing. It could be all the above.
Yeah.
It could all be happening at once. And that's the hard part people in the UFO community cannot wrap their heads around. Because one person is focusing on, you know, the fear, the abduction, you know, the victim program. Another person is saying there's no nuts and bolts. I don't believe it. You know, another person is saying, you know, this is all our back engineered government stuff. You know, another people are saying, you know, they're saying, hey, this is all holy, spiritual, and benevolent. You know, another group. And another group is saying they're here to help us. Another group is saying they're here just to watch, you know. So the thing about it is they're all correct. It's all going on right now. But we're evolving out of that low-level nonsense, and we're moving in a different direction. And it's really a direction that's so far outside the box and outside our ability to deal with that the people that are in charge can't deal with this. They don't have the technology, they don't have the understanding, they don't have the consciousness. So basically, here's the deal. You have to rise to the occasion to really understand what's going on, the big picture. Two, when a race comes here and they're thousands of years ahead of us in technology, in the interest of national security, you want to make friends with them. I mean, that to me would be the proper approach, not to try to shoot them down or take them out with whatever back engineered technology you have. That is the most ignorant approach I can imagine. You know, it's like going after a lion with a pea shooter. You're probably going to piss it off, you know, eventually. And that could turn out very bad. Luckily, these beings are extremely benevolent and they understand. But to me, it's like any way you look at it, the approach we're taking, we need to take a different approach. Like Nick was talking about, you know, maybe we should start talking to the sages the people that have had contact, the people that are interacting with these beings, find out who they are, why they're here, what their culture is like, you know, what their technology is like. Really get into the details of this versus keep playing this game as, are they out there? Are they going to come? What happens if they come? They're already here. They've been here forever. And let's get on beyond this and go, okay, why are they here? Who are they? And which ones are our friends? You know, which ones are benevolent? Which ones are here to help us in our awakening healing process to ensure our evolution forward? And which ones have been interacting in the past to create serious problems on the earth? And I think that's the approach we need to take.
Interesting. What were your thoughts, Ramon?
No, I was just realizing the New York one happened October 14 or 13?
The 14th.
Wasn't it last year that someone predicted, or the year before, of a huge sighting on the 14th? What was her name from Australia?
Well, that would be me. Unless you want to take the mainstream news that says that, and I find this highly suspicious, that a retired military made the prediction that October 13th of this year, ETs would start showing up over major cities. Does that sound a little suspicious to you?
Yeah. No, I was thinking of, what's her name?
Blossom Goodchild.
Yes, thank you. That she was saying that they were going to show up that year. I just find it all coincidence that...
Yeah, well, they didn't show up when she predicted it, but they... And I don't know if that was the date. I'm not sure.
October
14th.
October 14th was the date. I remember I was looking at the sky the whole day, and I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, that was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was last October that Blossom Goodchild said she got a message from the ETs, and they said that they would show up on that day. And it was in Alabama they were supposed to show up.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right, I'm going to get off the air and keep listening and let somebody else get on. It was a pleasure. And please tell Nate I miss his barbecue chicken. And have a good one.
Okay, all right, take care.
All right, my friend. Mata Ashta.
Hi.
All right.
Yeah,
this is good.
Now, one of your other calls, I believe his name was Mark, was asking to talk about the different beings.
There we go. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And so I'd love to go into that, where he was asking about some of the contacts here we've had in different beings, because I can go into that from basically low level on up, if that sounds like a good idea.
I talked to my friend Brent Miller, and he said that they have occasionally remote viewed UFOs. Now, Brent said this is a very, frightening experience, because as the remote viewer extends his consciousness into the ship, they will turn and look over their shoulder at you while you're looking at them.
Definitely, they will. They're very aware of your presence.
They can sense when you come in. And he says that the feeling that they get back is pure evil. And Ed Dames says the same thing. And this could be. Maybe they're just remote viewing the wrong ships.
Exactly.
But, you know, they're not getting the feeling of benevolence and friendliness. They're only getting the cold, stark, lab rat kind of response back.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to go into. So... we'll start on the low-level stuff. So the low-level stuff that we've seen, and we've had our moments with these guys, and it hasn't been fun. And we had to call in the higher beings to take care of it because, you know, basically we're outgunned on that level. But we've had, you know, encounters with some of the grays, different grays, and some of the reptilian beings. And another being that actually looks just like the beings that are on the fifth element. Do you remember those kind of pig-headed beings?
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, on the fifth element. Well, we ran into these guys here, and we've actually seen them actually possess people and totally mess with people. It's unbelievable. And those guys are real sticky. They're kind of hard to get out of your space, and sometimes the only way you can do it is to bring in the ultra-dimensionals, the higher dimensional beings and masters to move these guys out of your space. But it goes back to the mind in which you seek is the mind in which you connect. So if everything is a threat to you and you have maybe a military mindset or you see everything as dark or evil and that's what you're looking for, that's what you're going to experience and that's what you're going to connect with. And I'm not discounting what they saw or what they experienced. What I'm saying is that that matched the mind they were seeking. You know, they were looking for that and they have, a lot of those guys have that consciousness. Now you get into some of the other more advanced remote viewers, the very enlightened ones, they see other beings as well. They see the masters, they see the ultra-dimensionals, they see these beautiful Nordic beings, they see all kinds of different beings out there that are more benevolent. But again, you know, as I said before, you have to rise to the occasion to have those experiences. If you're always looking for the threat or the negative one or whatever, and you're a victim, that's what you're going to experience. So those beings do exist. They are what we call low-level contacts. We don't like to go there. And if we do engage that kind of energy, we bring in the high-level ones to come and take care of it. And they do, which would be the most, you might say, beneficial approach in the interest of national security is to align with the benevolent ones and stop, you know, with all this war and aggression and destruction of the planet. So basically, that's what we're doing.
James, I had somebody just chat in that said you can always tell a charlatan from the fact they change their name to something that sounds very new age.
Uh-huh. Well, I've got the same name I've always had since the day, the very beginning.
I think he was making a comment on Blossom Goodchild. So, I get you, Chatter.
Yeah, but anyway, what's interesting is that So putting that aside, these are the low-level contacts. Now, there's other beings out there that are physical adaptations to their environment. They look very different than we do. And they're cruising around and checking things out. And they're more like scientists and observers. They're just, they call them watchers. And they don't really get involved. And they're more just observing, you know, watching what's going on. And you know, this is the biggest show in the universe right now, the Earth's evolutionary process and the shift we're going. So you've got all these beings coming here and checking this out and just, and observing and watching. And then you have the ones that are really our ancestors. And this is going to go into a story that not too many people are talking about, but our ancestors, basically, the Earth has been colonized for over 600 million years. The archaeology is there to establish this. Michael Cremo has brought out a lot of this. Michael Tellinger has brought out a lot of this information. It's coming out from all these sources now that show clearly that the Earth goes through cycles and, you know, major cataclysms every so many years. And it start over as primitives, and then we go on from there. So, and there's also a large bank of evidence that showed some very advanced beings have been coming and going to the Earth for a long time. So the latest one that we have pretty good knowledge of, you might say, is the Atlantis and Lemuria colonies. And these were Palladian colonies. So, you know, they had their program and they kind of misused technology and they went through their cataclysm along with the other normal cycles on the Earth. And they were pretty much taken down or went out of the way and then had to start over as primitives. Well, those two colonies were Palladian colonies. Those are the Palladians started that. The Palladians, their ancestry goes back to Lyra. So they have the biggest stock here on the planet, you might say, the biggest interest. And just recently, the scepter has been passed to the Palladians, and they're coming in now, and they're using energies and frequencies and inspiring and assisting us in ways that only the sensitive are aware of. But we're seeing these major changes and shifts happening, you know, in the grid and things of that nature that are shifting and altering this experience. And they are contacting, you know, probably, I would say, more, I don't know how many thousands of people that they are working with and contacting. It might even be in the millions. And they're activating people in their soul. And there's also the Orion Council of Light, and they're the great initiators. They actually initiate people and wake you up to your soul memories and things of that nature. They were the ones that brought to me all of my past lives. I saw all of them, even the awful ones, very clearly. after that initiation. But and then you have there's these Syrian groups here that are coming in right now and working with the Palladians, and they're felines, and they're humanoid felines. And in the ancient times, we called them Narsringa. They were the benevolent protectors of humanity. And there's one that looks like more like a humanoid cat, like the Avatar beings, very agile, amazing beings. They're just incredible. When you experience one, your life just isn't the same. They're the way they move, everything is just phenomenal. And then they have ones that have actually a lion head and more of a lion head to them, like Sekhmet, you know, in the ancient Egyptian.
Oh, right. Sure.
Yeah. Now, these beings are extremely advanced. They're fifth, sixth, seventh dimensional beings that are assisting right now in this process. So all of these things are happening on these other levels. You have the Arcturians, the Andromedans, and all of these benevolent beings are now stepping up to the plate. And they're saying enough's enough. You know, this low-level nonsense that's going on, the manipulation, the travesty that's happening to humanity, the Earth, a lot of the wars and the reckless greed and everything else has been inspired by some low-level energies that have been in control for some time here. And that time is up. Like, the days of tyranny energetically are basically finished.
I see that on a lot of different levels. People that you would normally think would be kind of, you know, like dead, like a rock to this kind of energy, really are coming alive. One of the things that I've noticed is, like, 1773, the Tea Party. People, you know, as a movement, they've had enough. Now, they don't really know what to do. But the energy that they have, they're coming out of their silence.
Oh, yeah.
And they're ready. They're ready to turn the place upside down. They're ready to fire 435 lawmakers and clean house. They're taking anybody that they can take that has the look, has the sound. Forget about their political astuteness or their adeptness. Forget about their track record on what they voted on, or some of them may have never held public office. They might have been public servants on their local level, but never on a national level. And now they just pop up and run for Senate, and they're resonating with this Tea Party. And there's a new energy in town. And maybe this is what it has to do with, is this grand awakening.
That is part of it. It's like the statement of the Constitution needs to happen. You know, we're under fire here majorly by the county and other people that are basically saying that we have no right to assembly. We have no right to practice our spiritual beliefs or religious beliefs. They say we have no right to privacy. It's just amazing what these people are doing and, you know, finding us, send us threatening letters, all these things. And we try to cooperate with them and give Caesar what's his and fill out all the little paperwork and give them all the fees and everything else. But it doesn't matter. They're still trying to come down on us. And it's obvious now that it seems like all branches of our government has lost all consciousness of service to the people. They have shifted and they need to shift back. These rules, these whatever they're doing here, are totally unconstitutional. They serve nobody. And the whole town is behind us. I mean, the town loves us. We've been here 25 years. It was a ghost town, and people were starving. I mean, and now the town is totally flourishing. Everybody loves us. We had several planning commission meetings, and not one person spoke out against us. And this is a staunch Baptist community, you know, so you can imagine what we're dealing with here. And so we have a 25-year track record of helping people, spontaneous healings happening here, all kinds of incredible good things. Everybody's prospering. So they're behind us. But the governmental organizations are doing everything they can to stop this, which is unbelievable. You know, it just makes no sense whatsoever, unless there is some other force that is very threatened by what's going on here that's behind this, and seen or unseen, it's definitely at play. But you know, there are these.
I was going to say the governor of North Carolina, Governor Perdue, she came out and made a public statement that she's going to get rid of all regulations and laws on the books in North Carolina that don't make any sense. Stupid laws that invade people's privacy, do things to good organizations like eSETI, that the regulations, the conforming with which does not serve the public good and doesn't improve anything.
Exactly. That's exactly what needs to happen, because here, you know, we have a 25-year track record of no accidents. Basically, nobody's getting sick or ill. Nothing but good has come out of this place. And these guys can't come up with anything negative, but they are doing everything they can to shut us down. So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I told them, I said, well, and they go, well, it's a health and safety issue. And I said, there are no health and safety issues here. There's nothing whatsoever. Everything is functioning perfectly. You know, we had all the septic tanks checked out, everything. And they said, these things look like they haven't even been used, you know, so whoever's operating this place is doing a damn good job. So, I mean, there are no health and safety issues here whatsoever, but under that guise, they use these regulations to shut down businesses and things like that. And they've actually shut down several businesses in the community here already, just with their regulations, which is kind of psychopathic. It's like, killing the hand that feeds you, and the banksters are doing this as well. You can see this on a bigger scale, you know, without John Doe working or whatever, or Jane Doe working out there and having a job, having a good income and everything else, they're not going to be, have anything to feed on, basically, or anything to feed them.
Well, what the banks have done is they've asked the federal government to come in and pay off all their risky debt. Then they've taken the money that they made from those bailouts, shifted it to the Fed, and they're just earning interest on it. Now, only, you know, 0.25% per month, but it's steady, and they don't have to take any risk. And those guys are sitting back taking multi-million dollar bonuses. Wells Fargo posted a record profit the last two quarters, because they've taken the funds that they've gotten from the taxpayers and have shifted it to the Fed and are making interest on it. Now, I sat down and – well, I didn't sit down. I guess I did sit down and talk with Congressman Dennis Kucinich from Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
He made the statement that the banks are always two steps ahead of us. By the time we get a bill onto the floor, get it passed, and get it into law – the banks have already made a shift and have moved their money to another avenue where they're not serving the credit needs of the community. They are bleeding the community and the taxpayer, not of billions of dollars, of trillions of dollars. That's what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, to me, it's like reckless greed. It's a form of insanity, and these guys lust for power and wealth at any expense. And now the Native Americans have a wonderful prophecy about that, and you can combine their prophecies, which they do. They agree that not one nation has the whole prophecy. They combine their prophecies. And I love one of them. They talk about a beast, and the beast is 2,000 miles wide, which means this is how long this beast is going to have its reign. And they said the beast is all-consuming. It wants to control, dominate, destroy, consume everything. They said it's unbelievable, which is what we're seeing right now. And then they said eventually what happens, just when you think there's no more hope, there's that we're doomed, there's nothing left to happen, they said the beast consumes itself.
Right.
And then then you have the fall of the beast. And then they said then you have the thousands of years of peace and reunification with the Star Nations and everything else. And the Hopi talk about two lines of evolution, basically, and one line is living in harmony with each other and the planet and all working together. And then the other line is just focused on, you know, self and greed and things like that and playing that game. And that line stops. It just dies. And, you know, misuse of technology, all that stuff. It dies and the other one rises and moves up. So what we're seeing is an acting out of these prophecies, and anybody that can step back and look at this and see the big picture is seeing that, you know, the beast is in your face right now. It's being exposed on every level, and eventually it will consume itself. And those who are willing participants in the program of the beast are going to suffer the same consequences as the beast when it falls. So it is time to take this other path. And there are two realities that are getting ready to polarize and split. And one is with the people that are living in harmony with each other, that want to evolve spiritually and live according to the universal principles that are necessary for a healthy society and environment. And that's, you know, basically, you know, universal peace, brother, sister, love, individual freedom and prosperity for everybody, the unity consciousness, you might say. And so those are the people that are going to make it, and they're going to make their own personal connection with spirit, and they're going to be in touch with the earth, and they're going to know what's going to happen and where the earth is going, and they're going to move with that flow. Those are the ones
that are going to make it. It's interesting that you say that. There is this energy out there, even in the automotive market. I was going to say the automotive business, but in the automotive market, there is a strong desire among consumers. They want to do something good for the environment. They are buying vehicles that pollute far less, and that's evidenced by, you know, cars like the Toyota Prius, arguably one of the ugliest cars ever built. And yet people buy it because, you know, even though it doesn't do all that it could do, it does what it can to lower the carbon impact on the environment. Now, I have a lot of people come back at me harsh about that and say humans have no effect on the environment whatsoever. And, you know, technically maybe it's true, but that's not the point. The point is not that climate change is exacerbated by human activity. The point is that the idea of digging up oil, putting it into your gas tank, and burning it is very primitive, especially knowing that there is a cleaner, more renewable, less impactful, smarter way of driving around our communities. Now, I'm not talking about the jump in the car and drive from Trout Lake, Washington to San Francisco. That's obviously going to take a technology with more longer range performance, like internal combustion. I'm talking about the other 90% of your activities. It just makes sense that you drive a car that's recharged from the sun or is recharged from nuclear power or natural gas, not from the burning of coal or the burning of oil. It just makes sense. And that's the kind of unity energy that I'm feeling, that I'm seeing from the automotive consumer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely looking in that direction. I know you've been working a lot with the electric cars and the electric trucks and things of that nature, which I think you're in a perfect position right now for some of these new technologies, because, you know, you have the car, you have the motor in place and everything else. It's very practical. It's very powerful. The only thing you don't have is the distance that's needed, you know, or the charge capacity of the batteries. And I think that is right around the corner. It's already here now. It's just a matter of getting it out, because we do have some amazing batteries that have been, you know, shelved and the patents bought out. But there's also other technologies that are within the back engineered project. Small little devices that generate enormous amounts of electricity through the void or through zero point, and put one of those on your car and you've got it. I mean, you can go anywhere you want on the planet and, you know, you're done basically with all the pollutants and everything else. And to me, I go, you know, okay, so what about, they say, well, we don't make a carbon footprint and it's negligible and everything else, but you're breathing all that crap and it's going into your water. It's, you know, it's on the land, it's in the air, it's in the water. You know, look at what we just did to the Gulf, trying to bring this nonsense up, you know, and tell me that's not having impact.
That's part of the point. I mean, there's just too much blood and money spent on this oil thing. Now, I'm not saying those shouldn't be used for durable goods. I mean, I like my plastic iPod and my foam ball here on my microphone, all of which are made from oil. That's fine. Those are durable goods. And it's even higher profit, these kinds of chemicals and monomers. I'm saying it doesn't make any sense to put it in your gas tank and burn it. It can be done in a smarter fashion. And, you know, when it comes to these new technologies, I think Vision Motor Cars is in the best possible position because they've got, at least we foster this open architecture, best practices, best available technology philosophy. We realize we just built flashlights. There are people out there with better batteries. There are people out there with recharge technology, charge as you drive technology. We say, bring it on. We'll put it in the vehicle. There's no reason to keep it in hiding any longer. Let's proliferate it and put it on the road.
Yeah, here's the next step. Now, people have a really hard time wrapping their minds around a car that could run on 0 point, let's say, you know, and electric engine that could be charged by new solar technology or some of the nano solar technology. You could actually put it in the paint of the car as well. And also things that step up whatever has been gathered, you know, and technologies of that. They can kind of wrap their head around that and go, you know, that's possible, whatever. So let's go to the next step. Let's go into anti-gravity where you don't really need the fuel. You don't even need tires. You don't need the oil. You don't need all the other stuff that has to run a huge, you know, internal combustion engine or anything else, and go to the next step. Okay, imagine a car that had lift and everything else you could zip around in. You didn't need roads. You could tear the roads up and make plant corn or whatever else you need to do. You know, pretty amazing stuff. But then you take the next step and you go, well, wait a second. So I have anti-gravity now. Let's go the next step into counter-gravity. And let's propel this thing several thousand miles an hour with a field around it, a shield, you know, that protects it. And when you have that kind of technology, you can make right angle turns at several thousand miles an hour, stop on a dime, and your ship will be monitoring everything else around it so you don't have collisions and things like that. And it'll all be one big computerized network. And so basically you get up in the morning, you go, you know, I think I'll go have breakfast in Australia or you know, something of that nature. Or, you know, I think I'll drop in and have breakfast at my favorite little place in Hawaii or, you know.
I was going to say, because we still don't know what a Vegemite sandwich is.
Yeah, yeah. Or Australia. Yeah, well, yeah. So I mean,
I think we could use technology for that. We could. The point is that energy is the commodity of this planet. And there's still a third of the population of this country that is not within a day's walk of a telephone or a clean glass of water. And that's what's wrong.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there is technology, and you and I both, I won't mention his name, that he's actually oxygenated water. And he has the fuelless energy technologies to run those oxygenation processes where he can totally take polluted, basically sewer water, run this through the system, and it's freestanding. You know, it runs itself. It'll clean this water out and oxygenate it and actually become antibiotic. So oxygen is the highest antibiotic you can get, you know, natural antibiotic in the system. Raise the oxygen levels in the blood. It kicks the brain on, gets rid of the pathogens, even breaks down a lot of the chemicals and the other things that we don't need in our system. And this technology is there right now, and you have to ask, why is this not being implemented? Why don't we have a box, a thing that we can hook a hose into it, clean the water, it runs itself, and provide whatever power we need to the village or whoever else, and drop it off at these places where there's disasters or places that actually need fresh water that are going through horrendous challenges, you know, just with the water and the other things. And we've seen the systems in place today, you know, basically over in, oh God, I got a mental block. Where'd that just Haiti?
Right.
You know, yeah, over in Haiti right now, they go, hey, where's where's the food? You know, you guys got billions of dollars. Where's our food? Where's our clean water? We're drinking the water you're bringing here, and everybody's getting sick and ill. It smells bad. You know, where's our tents? Where's our shelters? You know, billions of dollars are going into these programs, and it's not getting to the people it's supposed to get to. So, you know, to me, it goes back to, you know, who have you given your power away? What are their motives? And are they really here to serve humanity, the earth? Are they there in your highest and best good? And I would have to say the answer right now is on the majority, no.
Yeah, and I have a chatter that says, you know, or drop into a new coffee shop on the moon where the food's great, but there's no atmosphere. You know, that's one of the things that President Kennedy really inspired us to do when he said, we're going to the moon and we're going to be there in this decade. Well, you could say, gee, you know, it wasn't really that big of a deal. You know, once we did it and we collected all the rocks, but it was the technological mountain that we climbed, and we're still benefiting from that effort. Now, I want to play a couple of audio clips here because this really fits what we're talking about. This abject abandonment of a pathway of technology which not only could save our planet and our race, but could raise the quality of life of our planet where we might be able to walk away from our dependence upon money. Because once we have energy and refrigeration and the ability to feed and you know, drink and eat, then we really don't need money the way we've always needed money. Look at what our mega corporations and our giant trillion-dollar governments are doing to us. As James has said, we're abdicating our own sovereignty over to another body, which is misusing that stewardship. We're electing people to office that are taking license with our liberty that they should not be taking. Now, I'm going to play these two clips. You might think they're unrelated, but they're not. This experiment took place 1 year ago this month, and I want you to listen to how profound this has affected us right now. Let me go ahead and this is the L Cross mission that happened a year ago. There's a short commercial here. Let me mute this for a second. And then we'll play the commercial. All right, so give me about 19 seconds and we'll play it. This is the L Cross mission that was an experiment designed to discover if there's water on the moon or not. Now, people would say, gee, what good is it to learn if we have water on the moon? Because it's important, and here's why.
More water than was first thought on the moon. NASA said today a significant source of water was found when it deliberately crashed a rocket into the lunar surface last month. There has been other evidence of water on the moon, but NASA says this is the best evidence yet. Here's Ned Potter.
The findings, said scientists, was definitive. Their probe crashing into the moon last month had kicked up large quantities of ice deep in a permanently shadowed crater.
This is not your father's moon. Rather than a dead and unchanging world, it could in fact be a very dynamic and interesting one.
Ice on the moon would be good news for future astronauts. If they ever build a moon base, they could literally live off the land. They could melt the ice for water, or since it's H2O, they could break it down into hydrogen for fuel and oxygen for breathing. There had been some tough moments after the probe called L-Cross originally hit. NASA had predicted it would look like this animation, creating a spectacular plume of debris. But the real thing was all but invisible to cameras. So for a month, the scientists went through satellite readings looking for the chemical signature of water mixed with other minerals.
It would be water that you could drink. It's water like any other water.
The scientists today were asked if they would rather celebrate the discovery with champagne or water. They laughed. Ned Potter, ABC News, New York.
All right, so that is the first part of the story. Now, there's more to this than meets the eye, because the president gets involved in this, and the Wall Street Journal goes after him and asks him, why did you give up on the mission to the moon? George Bush had inspired us all over again, saying we're going back to the moon in 2020, And NASA was gearing up, and so were the high schools, generating a fervor about becoming astronauts again. And then this happened. Let me see if there's some advertisements on this. Of course there is. Hang on 1 minute while we get through the advertisements. You always have a little bit of advertisement that happens in front of these clips. So in eight seconds, six now, we'll find out what the real story is, what's going on.
If anyone's ever promised you the moon, you can now go back to them and say that, in fact, you know now that they are lying, because Ashby Jones from the Wall Street Journal is joining us to talk about these legal issues that might arise from this latest analysis. In fact, who owns the moon, Ashby, is the question we're putting to you. Does anybody?
Yeah, it's a weird question, right? The answer is that nobody owns the moon. Nobody owns the moon, and that is the result of a Cold War treaty that was made and signed and ratified by 98 countries back in 1967, which basically says that no country can exercise sovereignty over the moon. So right now, nobody owns it. Now, as you just heard Lee talking about, if we ever are able to send manned missions to the moon and are able to extract minerals or what have you that have some value, in order to do that, you're going to have to set up a sort of a legal regime which addresses ownership of stuff on the moon.
Right, because companies or countries aren't going to go and just explore willy-nilly if that even becomes a reality, if they don't think that they can actually keep or have some sort of rights to whatever they find.
That's exactly right. I mean, as a source told me today, I mean, the law of finders keepers isn't going to fly on the moon. Nobody's going to invest $100 million to send people up to the moon and bring stuff back if they can't be assured that what they get they're going to be able to hold on to. So, you know, that might be 100 years down the line before that happens. But until then, you know, the UN and other international legal bodies are going to have to deal with this.
But does that treaty prevent any nation from, or even a private enterprise from doing something to commercialize opportunities on the moon? If Intel wanted to open a chip factory up there, is there something in the treaty that would say Intel is foreclosed from doing that?
Well, it's sort of a loophole that some people have tried. You've probably seen these organizations that have, we're going to sell a star or sell a part of the moon or something like that. They're sort of going under the theory that it doesn't apply to them because the treaty only applies to countries. But if you look at the fine print of the treaty, that you'll read that actually the treaty includes, you know, the countries and the people that live in the countries. So arguably, yeah, that would cover a company like Intel. Now, the bigger issue here is not a legal one; it's a practical one. Intel, nobody can do that anything on the moon. Sources tell me without a serious amount of help from a government. It just isn't possible at this stage.
Do you think governments are now that this water has been discovered there, the new analysis has come out, do you think this could increase the interest in, you know, moving forward in that direction then and then trying to get first some laws on the books and then actually the exploration started?
Yeah, I think it'll increase the interest. Whether or not it happens is anybody's guess, I think, at this point.
It's certainly nice to speculate about it, isn't it? Great story.
So, you know, now you see the scope of what people are thinking about, the legalities of it, how much can we invest in it. And then we have the president saying things like, look, I hate to be, stark about this, but, you know, we've already been there and it's no big deal. There's really nothing in it for us to go there. And that's not really the way we want to think. The way we want to think is that we are going to reach further out into the stars for answers of how to support ourselves here. And, you know, maybe like this grand awakening that we've been talking about off and on all night, we realize that the ancient system of exchanging our labor for something like a dollar or a dinar or a mark or a pound or a euro, and then taking that euro or that dollar down as a contract that we've actually done work for somebody, exchange it for something that we want, like food or a car or clothing or a home, it's legal tender. We can exchange our labors directly in all kinds of different ways, whether we're buying a taco or a Cadillac. Maybe we can move beyond that if we have plenty of energy, enough water, and enough food. Now, many would argue against that, and I want your feedback on this, James, that if we had that, really, we would overpopulate this planet so quickly that we would destroy ourselves as surely as bacteria overpopulating a petri dish.
Yeah, I've heard that comment, and actually I've heard people in the UFO community say that, you know, we are extremely overpopulated and we need to reduce the population and things of that nature. And I said, well, if you're really committed to that, then why not you first? You know, let's you know, why are you so special? And you know, so basically I don't think when I look at the landmass and the unused, you know, you fly over areas, you see these huge areas that nothing's happening there. Nothing's being done and everything else. But the way I see it is that it's not so much the people, it's how the people are interacting with the land. And when you have the free energy or the fuelless energy and you have a person that's conscious, they could go in there and do very low impact housing and even underground housing and things of that nature and actually maintain the surface, you know, in a whole and natural way. There's so many ways of doing it where you wouldn't even see much of an impact at all. And I mean, that's the way it is. The way we're doing it now, where we sprawl out in these big urban developments and we tear everything out, pave the road and put in grass lawns and you know, all the houses are just big, massive energy consumers. That program, I think, yes, that needs to end. You know, we need to be doing something a little more aligned with nature, closer to nature, and live in harmony with the land. And actually,
I look at some of these, you know, these mega cities, like I've been to Mexico City and Beijing and Shanghai and L.A. and New York. And, you know, these are areas that cannot sustain themselves. They've got to import food. They've got to import energy from, you know, from grand resources. Heck, they reroute the Colorado River to feed water to Los Angeles and to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, we have to think about things differently. And when we have bounty, we cannot multiply like lab rats.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, we definitely need but I think that's more of a educational thing that we need to do versus, you know, the extermination thing, which a lot of other beings are heavily involved with right now, because what I'm seeing right now with a lot of countries, the birth rate, everything is just, especially with more advanced countries, is actually going way down. And I know some of the project that they're doing in the food and everything else that they're putting out there and all these processed foods and even the stuff, which is a whole nother subject, and the chemtrails are all aimed at population control and things of that nature. So basically there is a massive movement now by one group that thinks that we should exterminate, you know, 50% of the people. And there's other groups that think that they're going to go underground during the changes and then come back up and rule the world. And they don't want any opposition on the surface when they do. So they are planning their programs. There's so many different programs out there, but there's so many that are
just, let's go ahead and move them into their shelters now.
Yeah.
Lock them and throw away the key. And we'll take it from here.
And put a nice little crack in there, you know, for the water to come in. And give them plenty of water. That's kind of what's going to happen.
But what do you think about the idea about exploring other planets, about, you know, the Kepler mission and the idea that there are other M-class planets? We could expand. We could move out into the universe and grow and diversify the human race.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to think about what are we expanding, you know, into these other environments. Are we expanding the same just total lust for power and greed? And what is fueling this expansion? And what kind of people are going to go to these other planets and other environments? And
that's a good point.
Yeah. Are we going to go infect another planet and destroy it? You know, or are we going to clean up our own act here first? And then
we going to take our religion out there with us? You know, there are a couple of records. One is we look at some of the compacts. When the pioneers came from Europe, you know, these weren't the aristocrats. Oh, no, not by any means, people. These were people that sold everything they had, including the labors of the rest of their lives, and in some cases, the rest of their children's lives, to get away from an overpopulated, over-oppressive government. Step aboard a little tiny 50 or 60 foot long wooden ship, sail off the edge of what they were sure was a flat earth to a frontier where they could be free and practice and worship God the way they want to. But I don't think it's going to be that way if we move out into space.
No, I think that we're going to have to transcend all religious and cultural boundaries and get beyond that, like some of these ETs have done. And, you know, it's not that they're godless. They see, you know, the creator in all creation, and they see it. They have a much more expanded view of creation and the universe. And they know our history better than we have any clue about, because, you know, we've been lied to for so long. And, you know, history is his story, and it's always told by the victor of the wars and everything else. We aren't hearing her story or anything else. And it's always written to keep the status quo going. But, you know, basically, I think it's time for us to get back to the basics. You know, we don't need a little old man with a beard and a laptop keeping track of us to behave like decent human beings. And, you know, it's all about, as I said before, just adhering to the universal principles that are necessary for a healthy society and environment. And we know what those are. Those are all written to the heart of hearts of every person.
Yeah, we have learned about it in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Exactly. You know, yeah. So you know, it's really simple. You know, even Jesus said that. You know, he said, love God with all your heart, treat your neighbor as yourself. You know, love your neighbor. Basically, you know, we need to honor the creator in all creation. Add one more rule to that, and we've got it made. That's all we need to do. So, you know, in the Native American traditions, I love the Cherokee saying, they said, if it isn't good for everyone, it isn't good, you know. And if we all started operating that way and looked at the next generations and what we're doing, and if whatever we're doing is going to create loss or pain or suffering to another, we need to just stop doing it. And no matter how much we can dismiss this with our intellect and be led down the path of fear and aggression and all this other nonsense and division and separation, we have to get back to the basics and step back and take a look at what we're doing and how it is affecting others, and that we all came from the same source. We all return to the same source, and it's time to start acting like one big family instead of, you know, all this competition and war and aggression and other nonsense that's going on.
So what you're advocating then is that we lay down the tribal flags and realize once and for all from this day forward that we are earthlings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a novel idea. I think, you know, to me, I don't think we need to so much get rid of all the different cultures. I think that people actually incarnate into some of these cultures because that's where they need to be and they need to experience that culture. I went and studied almost all the cultures and all the religions and everything else, and I realized the end story is basically, as I said, we all come from the same source. We all return to the same source, and all these other many coats and many cultures that we adorn in the process are individual choice and things like that. But there are golden threads or universal principles that are throughout all the cultures and all the beliefs and all the religions. And basically, it's all about just being kind to each other and being kind to the planet. That's the bottom line.
And when we look at the teachings of the masters, and by the masters I mean, you know, of course, Buddha and Christ and others, you look at their teachings, even when Jesus arrived in Jerusalem for his final 3-year ministry, he didn't come there to establish a church. In fact, he was quite adversarial with the establishment church, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, and the Romans.
Uh-huh.
He didn't endorse any of them. Of course, he went to the temple. Of course, he taught the scriptures of Torah. Of course, he healed. But he didn't buy a condo. You know, as far as I know, he didn't even own a piece of jewelry, because that wasn't the purpose of life. What he was trying to do is explain to us that everything he does, we can do and more.
Exactly.
That was the main teaching.
Well, you know, he lived a miraculous life, and the pattern that he laid down of his life is a pattern that we all can transpire to be. But I've seen over and over again that same pattern is throughout all these other cultures.
Sure.
And you know, the pattern is very obvious. You see it. When he was first born, he said, "I am the Son of Man." His parents were Joseph and Mary. He was the Son of Man. That was his identity. Later on, he said that, he goes, "Well, wait a second, you know, I'm a messenger," you know, because he started receiving messages from the source or from God or whatever, and was channeling these messages, you know, to all these people and helping people. And then he goes, "Well, wait a second, I'm not this just this biological body. I'm not this boy. I came from God. I'm a spirit."
Right.
That has a body. He goes, "I'm the Son of God. I came from God." And not so much that he's the only son, but he came to that realization that I am the Son of God. I'm a spirit that has a body and a personality. And then the last thing he said in his, when his total immersion, he became one with the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness on all planes and dimensions throughout the multiverse, which is the source, whatever you want to call it. He became one with that. And he said, "I am God. The Father and I are one. You know, I do nothing, but the Father through me doeth the works." And that's the end result. He became one, aligned his personality self, his body, with his higher selves, his multidimensional selves. And then he actually transcended the greatest of all challenges and fears, which is death itself. And that was, by example, he led an outrageous life, and to show us by example, not that we all give our power and worship him, but that we become like him and follow his example. So, you know, he made it very clear. He said, "The same God in me is within you." You know, he kept saying, "God is, you know, ye are gods. The temple is within." You know,
John 10:34.
Exactly. He just laid it out there and said, you know, don't worship me. You're diminishing the God within you. Go within, make your own God connection, you know, and ye will do greater works than I, as you said. He goes, "For I go on to the Father." So basically that's all been misinterpreted, changed, altered, creating this guilt, fear, unworthiness, keep him on the cross, and then, you know, you pay us and we tell you what he says, basically, or we tell you what God says. If you don't, you're condemned to everlasting fire in hell or whatever. So that whole program was never his teachings. And people need to wake up. And it's not the teachings of any master, saint, or sage. And if you were aware of who he really is, and if you could connect with him spiritually and actually connect with his energy and have a one-on-one experience with him, you would find out he is the most blissful, joyous being you ever experienced, with a great sense of humor.
Yeah,
and the
level of love that you feel is really overwhelming. Once you love like that, it changes everything.
Yeah, and it's time to take him off the cross as this miserable, suffering man, you know, that is in extreme pain and nailed to a cross and can't go anywhere or do anything. And that whole program is just so ridiculous. It's not who he is. It's not who he ever was. And I wanted to get into that earlier too, because the masters that are appearing here at ESETI that we've actually been photographing and connecting with, the reason they are appearing here is because we understand they are universal beings. They aren't owned by any religion, by any teaching or any church or whatever. They're universal beings. They're here in service to the Creator, and they're here to empower people to make their own personal God connection. That's the bottom line. And they're here to assist us in awakening and healing.
It doesn't get said any better than that. James, I really appreciate it. We're I told you 3 hours would go so fast.
Yeah, it did.
I will reciprocate and, of course, come on to As You Wish Radio with you anytime you like. I really appreciate you coming on the program. As usual, it's... we could talk for days, and we have talked for days. I highly encourage anyone, clear your summers around the July period and make plans to go to ESETI for the conference this coming summer. And next November, 11-11-11, we will see you in Louisville, Kentucky. And don't forget to tune in to Coast to Coast AM tomorrow night between their time is 11 and 2 in the morning. Eastern time, that'll be 2 and 5 in the morning, which is the wee hours of the morning if you want to listen live. But we're gonna release some stuff tomorrow night that has never been heard on mainstream radio before. So you don't want to miss it. This is going to change everything.
Yeah, give George a shout out. Give him a big hug for me and tell him that, hey, it's time to bring out the positive side.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, they have to come up with content 7 days a week. We only have to do it 1 day a week. And so the quality of what you and I do is a different game altogether.
Exactly. This whole threat fear-based program just really needs to shift, you know, into the bigger picture.
Well, it's all about production, so maybe one day they'll make that move. But until then, they're still the 800-pound gorilla. We think they do a great job of at least getting some ideas out there and an avenue for some of us to tell our story, and we will never, ever fault them for that. Thank goodness Art Bell built that organization, and at least in some fashion it survives, and those people that do have a great message to tell occasionally can get on there and tell it unfettered, and for that we applaud them.
Great. Yeah, I agree.
All right, my friend, thank you so much, my brother, for coming on and helping us out and clarifying a lot of things about this recent increase in not only UFO activity but mainstream coverage of it. We appreciate you.
All right, thanks so much for having me on the show. Good night.
Thanks, James. Good night. All right, Earth Explorers, we're right up against it. I will play my exit. We'll see you next week. Don't forget, first week in November, if I can swing it, I've got to make a trip to China for the car company, but if I can swing it, we're going to have Michael Cremo on the first Sunday in November, and we're going to be talking about his new book, The Forbidden Archaeologist. So don't miss that. Thank you so much for being part of X Squared Radio. We will see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.